Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino back here, and boy, do we have a treat for you, because I'm so excited to have the opportunity to get to talk about the upcoming Survivor Season 40 Winners at War with a man who I have spent hundreds and maybe thousands of hours talking about Survivor with. It is my great pleasure to welcome back to Talking Some Survivor with us here today, the great Mr. Josh Wiggler.
Josh.
Yes.
Lur.
Yes. Josh.
I was going to try and just come in very somberly to really match my tone from the last Wiggle Room. And I can't stick it. Also, I have a little bit of a cold, so I was trying to hold back a laugh to keep it from going. And I don't have it in me. I can't play that game. Hi, Rob. Hi, everybody. It's me. I'm back.
Well, Josh, I'm so happy to get the chance to talk about some Survivor Season 40 with you today.
And that
is what we're going to do. We're actually going to go back and actually listen to a lot of the stuff. This is something that we had been planning for quite some time to be able to do. So I'm glad we are able to do this today.
To do little bit of a deep dive back in the time machine.
Yes. Revisit some old takes that we had when Josh and I recorded the 300-hour audiobook, The Evolution of Strategy, which people still listen to. So many people tell me that they listen to it and they go to sleep every night listening to The Evolution of Strategy.
That I believe, that we put people to sleep. That makes a lot of sense to me. Yeah. Look out, Scoots. We're coming for your patrons.
Yeah, so we're going to be playing some of our maybe best and worst takes from TEOS here today, doing much more as we look back at some clips from us and maybe even some of the Season 40 cast members themselves on this very special episode of Rob as a Podcast. But Josh, what have you been up to since? What's going on with you? How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. I'm doing really, really well. I'm doing great. I'm very nervous right now, so I apologize if I'm a little rusty.
Why the nerves?
I haven't been on a Survivor podcast since The Thing.
Can I be honest? You didn't miss a ton. I mean, we had fun. I mean, yeah, you didn't miss nobody's like, oh my god, Josh, right, you gotta go back.
I know. No, I haven't really gotten much of that taste.
Save that for the Lost podcast. Yeah.
Well, the Lost podcast has continued. That has gone uninterrupted with Mike Bloom and I doing that over at Post Show Recaps. And the lights have been very much on at Post Show Recaps over the last several weeks. So if you've listened to any of the scripted stuff, I really haven't gone anywhere. But I know I did kind of just like peace the F out on Survivor in the middle of the season last fall.
Understandable.
I think maybe pretty clear that mentally was not in the best headspace at the time, and just felt like need a minute. Give me a second.
Yeah.
Need to take a breath. Need to take a minute. Certainly really felt very, very confident in not wanting to report on it anymore, not wanting to write about it anymore. Really, really looking at it like a huge gift from my team at THR for them to be like, yeah, then just don't do it. And nothing on that front has wavered. I'm really, really grateful for the time that I had to report on the show, and so grateful that I can say that I had that time, and that time is indeed over. But I did, you know, when we closed out the last Wiggle Room, I had said, you know, the future of the podcast, TBD. I know I'm not going to be watching on Wednesday night. And what I'd meant about that at the time was, well, I don't have to report on the show anymore, so I don't have to watch it right away. I can wait until like Friday to watch the episode, see how the Twitterati reacts to it. And I woke up the morning after we recorded the Wiggle Room to my own funeral. You know, I woke up to a really wild outpouring of messages from so many different people who I've met, people who I have not met, people whose names I had, you know, fleeting familiarity with, people whose names I had never seen before. And it was really, really wild. And the overall reaction seemed to be, you do you, boo boo, in, you know, more words than that. And, you know, my feeling was like, well, I was probably going to come back on the Wiggle Room the next week. And I really looked at that as an opportunity and maybe people picking up something that me myself had not been fully appreciating at that time. It's like, hey, maybe you need to take a minute. Maybe you really need to take like a full true step away from this for a while. And as a result, like I got to spend 2 months or so without any Survivor in my life for the first time in years. I can't remember the last time that I've had like a real break from the show like this, you know, because when you're doing the preseason stuff or you're doing it, you know, when we were doing TEOS, even if a season isn't on in some way, shape or form, I'm actively thinking about a Survivor project. And so it was like the first month and a half that I had in, it feels like 5 years, that I was able to turn the Survivor brain off. Mm-hmm. And it was an enormous gift that I can absolutely never repay. It was just very validating and really, really powerful for me and really helpful for me. I've been really focusing down on just doing what's right for me. Sobriety maintained. I know that I had said on the last one, that I was looking at 2 years of sobriety. I misspoke. It's 1 year of alcohol sobriety, 2 years of the other guy. We can talk about that on social media if you prefer. And just focusing on things that are overwhelmingly positive in my life. I got to travel a little bit with Emily. We got new kitty cats. There's new cats in the Wiggler.
Follow Josh on Instagram to see more. Great. I was showing my kids some cat videos this morning.
Lola and Dougie. Yes. So if you like the cat content, I am posting over there. And while I was on my trip to Japan with Emily, where we were really, I didn't have my laptop with me. It was the first time I'd gone anywhere without bringing my computer with me. So I was really disconnected. Even if my Instagram stories would have indicated otherwise, they were pretty prolific. That was my preseason, Rob. The Survivor preseason, contribution that I had was my trip to Japan. I at one point, the embargo for season 40 obviously lifted. And the first thing that I saw were these black and white photos from Timothy Kuratek, who's one of the photographers who goes out to location, who's an enormously fantastic human being, just a really, really great guy. And, you know, I'm sure he's done incredible, incredible things outside of Survivor. But from what I've seen of his work, this was like career best stuff, certainly franchise best stuff in terms of the photos. And I'm a human being, and I couldn't help but just get massively, massively pumped to see Tony and Kim and Tyson and Yule and Sophie and Michelle and Ethan and Romber and all of these people back on my screen. So I have found myself after like a month and a half to 2 months away, for the first time, like getting like a Survivor fan itch again, which is a very different feeling than I have had about Survivor for a really long time.
Well,
A lot of word soup. I'm sorry. That's kind of where I'm at with everything.
I mean, I feel like everything you're saying makes a lot of sense. And you have been, very outspoken about a lot of your criticisms with the show. And I just sense that you felt like, you know, as somebody who was reporting about the show in an official capacity, with the kind of access that you have with, THR, that I think you probably felt like that you've had these things bottled up that you've wanted to say for a really long time.
Yes.
And I'm sure it's very freeing for you to be able to, you know, be able to speak your mind and not have to dance around what you want to say. And I'm sure that took a real mental toll on you to be able to, you know, not be able to say what you want to say.
Yeah, I think that's it. Yeah, that's basically it. like, I'm having more fun, like, tweeting about Survivor right now than I've had in a very long time, just, like, thinking and talking about Survivor. The end edge of extinction stuff and the Jimmy Fallon of it all has I'm not taking it very, very seriously, but I'm having a fun time with it. It's playful. It's good.
Yeah, walk that through. What's going on with Jimmy Fallon and you?
Well, nothing's going on with Jimmy Fallon and I don't think. I think I had a shot and I think I blew it. my guess. But I mean, I came back from my trip. I have intense jet lag brain. Mm-hmm. Of course I know, you know, I'm engaging with the preseason. I'm retweeting Dalton and Gordon stuff. Everybody should be doing that. You have no idea how hard people work on this preseason stuff. And it's not enough to just copy and paste a quote from an article and put it on Reddit. You have to source the link. You have to click the links. You have to show up and do the business for these people. Otherwise, they're never going to be able to get out there and do this again.
Yeah.
You have to,
it
you
doesn't
have
hurt to do it for podcasts too.
It doesn't hurt to do it for podcasters either. You really got to share those links. Do your part, because if you like the content, you got to support the content. Otherwise, the content's going to go away. Don't take it for granted. That's me on my soapbox. I'm sure I've got many other soapboxes that I will stand on because I'm insufferable now, if I wasn't before. But I came back from my trip and, you know, was lightly engaging with the preseason stuff. Of course, you know, I'm a human being who is a Survivor fan on the internet. So I'd been reading the Redmond stuff too, of Edge of Extinction is back. There's these things called fire tokens. And I don't think that I like fully understood, what the fire tokens were and their involvement with EOE. EOE, I get. I know what that is. Mm-hmm. But I was reading about the fire tokens and how they're so tied up in EOE. And I was just, and remain just baffled that Survivor's like takeaway from the 37 and 38 cycle isn't David versus Goliath was one of our very best seasons of all time. And Edge of Extinction, thankfully we were able to get what we got out of it, but that was a creative disaster and we should never do that again. And instead their takeaway seems to be Edge of Extinction is awesome and let's keep digging in on Edge of Extinction and let's keep piling on twists and let's throw money at people as well, as a Survivor advantage. And it's just baffling to me. Mm-hmm. It's just baffling to me. How is that your takeaway from the 37 and 38 cycle? And so I just started very jet laggedly mouthing off about it on Twitter. And you know, stating my very truly held opinion, that, from my experience with the process, that I think Jeff Probst is a big fan of EOE. He's such a big fan that it was almost on IOI. And we are very lucky. I guess the few things we are lucky about with the 39 outcome is that there wasn't an Edge of Extinction on there in addition to Island of the Idols. It would have been a narrative disaster. I don't know how hard it would be to make it more of a train wreck last season, but that could have been in play. And the way that the process works is that 41 is going to start filming relatively soon. This isn't inside track. I'm pretty clearly out of the inside track these days when it comes to what Survivor is cooking up. But I know that Survivor shoots in March and they got to lock that creative in fairly soon. And it would not shock me at all if Jeff, who loves Edge of Extinction, wants to bring it back. So I just said that out loud because that's a thing that I can say out loud now. I don't have to worry about my access getting pulled. Mm-hmm. That's done. I am free. And that kind of has taken on a life of its own with this whole Edge of Extinction thing. The thing that I do feel is if Edge of Extinction is in the works for this upcoming cycle, if it's something that's in the cards, the only time that fans can do anything about it is right now. Mm-hmm. So like, I don't know what the answer is to that. Is it tweeting at Jimmy Fallon to go get your boy Jeff and tell him not to?
Well, why Jimmy Fallon? How is Jimmy Fallon involved with this?
I don't know. I was talking with somebody.
Yeah.
And I was talking with a friend of mine, who is prolific in the Survivor space.
Mm-hmm.
And is a close friend of mine. And I don't want to out this person, because this is somebody that the podcast audience is deeply familiar with. But I was talking to this person and they were saying, I think you're going about this Edge of Extinction thing all wrong. I think like sending the mob after Jeff is not the right call. I think what you got to do is you got to get one of the celebrity Survivor fans to be the Jeff Whisperer.
Seems like he's very receptive to ideas from a lot of different famous Survivor fans. Tyler Perry, Who knows? Sia has gotten ideas on the show.
She's the Jimmy fan favorite Fallon, award winner. Fallon Booth.
Yeah, he invented the... So it does seem as though that people on Twitter, hey, change this, does not seem like that works. But it does seem like that the famous Survivor fans, they put an idea out there. Jeff does seem very open to suggestion.
Yeah.
Mike White even...
White killed Redemption Island.
Yeah.
You know? So I feel like that was a really good idea from the person who gave me that idea, who I wish I could credit right now, but that person would have to step forward and take the credit.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, that person needs to remain nameless, Rob.
Yeah.
So then I tweeted all of that at Jimmy Fallon and Tyler Perry and Sia, and I got a Jimmy Fallon follow out of it. I was like, ooh, we got a bite. And then immediately after he followed me, I slid into his DMs and gave him my cell phone numbers. Like, Jimmy, call me. So spoiler alert, I didn't get a call.
So, Josh, last night that I was on a lengthy patron cast with the patrons of Robin's podcast. And I actually got a surprising amount of calls from people who said, hey, you know, I'm actually in on the Fire tokens, and here's why.
Yeah.
Some people did seem excited about it because they felt like that what was bad about the Edge of Extinction, that it will, other than somebody who gets voted out is coming back into the game, that there's almost like a secondary game going on the Edge of Extinction, that the Fire tokens make it even more strategic, even adding a layer of duplicity that's never been seen before to the game.
Sure.
So that I was surprised, actually, because I was not super excited about the Fire tokens, but I was surprised to hear that at least some people are in on Fire tokens. Idea that I had came to me last night was, is the move maybe to push for Redemption Island?
See, I don't want to compromise, man.
I'm a pragmatist. I'm a pragmatist.
So let me just say what I can say now that I can say whatever the hell I want.
Yeah.
And what I'll say is, I think that when we do this thing of like bargaining with Survivor, we got to tread lightly, because, you know.
Why? Angelina says start with a lowball offer.
So I have a lot of regrets that I wasn't harsher on EOE during the EOE season. And one of the reasons why I was as down on it as I was because I walked away from being out on location for 39 and knowing that Jeff was like, man, I think people would love to know what Ronnie Barda's up to right now. I was like, no. The whole point of Survivor is you get voted out and you ritualistically die in the game, and then that's the stakes, and that's why it works.
Mm.
And so knowing that, like, the idea was still brimming in the back of his brain, I was like, no, I gotta speak out against it as much as I can. So I really didn't give EOE a fair shake this season.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it because this was burning on my mind. And then when I found out that EOE was back for 40, I nearly just like flipped the table. Mm-hmm. When I read it the first time, I was like, God, yeah. No, please, no. And so I think that the danger is, like, look, is it more fair to be like, well, let's just see how it plays out?
Yeah.
It could be great. It could be great. Is that the more, like, measured, rational, calm response? Sure. And do I think that that's also, like, an appropriate, healthy energy level to invest into the show? Absolutely. 1,000,000%. What I'm throwing out there is my view. People have said Wiggler's leading the charge on this end of Edge of Extinction thing. I'm not. I'm really not. I do not have the time to be at the forefront of a Survivor mm-hmm. movement right now.
Yeah.
What I am doing is I am telling you my opinion, and my opinion is if you're not loud about the shit that you don't like about Survivor right now, and if you're not loud about it now, like, we're in like a hot zone right now, this mm-hmm. January through February stretch, and I would say, like, you've got like until like the final week of February, and I think like right around then, like, logos are made and designs are designed, and you can't really do much beyond that. I'm just telling you what I know. I'm just telling you what I've experienced through my experience, that if you don't like that Survivor has gotten so twisty, if you don't like that Jeff is so bored on location that there needs to be 300 losers brackets in a single season with gold piles being tossed at the players. And it's all supposed to make some level of coherent sense in a 42-minute episode.
Then you have to say that now.
Yeah. You just have to say that now. You don't say, let's get Redemption Island instead.
And then at the merge. What do you think about that?
You know, whatever. Fine. Yeah. Sure. Hey, the truth is, whatever happens, and that's it.
Right.
As long as people are safe, as long as their psychological well-beings and their physical well-beings are in primary focus, and I am encouraged by, I have not been able to go back and watch any of 39. I haven't watched the interview with Jeff and Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
I read the press release, so I understand to a degree some of the changes that they're making. I think they're good strides. I think that they could have come sooner. Certainly Survivor has had a history with this stuff, but I think Survivor's also catching up with where we are culturally right now, and maybe needed a real shove in that direction in this big public way to make a change. I think that there are still so many more changes that need to be made in order to make Survivor a little more fair for many different types of players. We'll walk those bridges as if they come up. I won't bang the drum too much on that right now, because I know that's not what anyone's here for. But I do think that, like, this is the time to make noise if you give a crap.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is, if Survivor is still going on, and if people are safe, and if people are happy, and if it's still an entertaining TV product, that's what I care about primarily the most. But I'm also now in this place where I guess I can kind of just mouth off a little bit more than usual about my favorite show. Mm. So and it is still my favorite show. I never stopped being a fan. Like, Rob, you and I spent every single day of a year and a half together talking for hours on a microphone about every single Tribal Council of Survivor through 30 seasons. This is inextricably tied into my adult life, let alone my teenage years and my early adult life. I'm not ever going to be able to escape the Survivor vortex, and I don't want to. I want to be a fan again, and I find myself gravitating towards that, and it's a good feeling.
Yeah, and I just want to be very clear that I feel like that ideologically we are in lockstep, that I feel exactly the same way that you do, that I just keep coming back to the idea that I feel like that Jeff picks up his phone and looks at it and sees people shouting at him, and any human being, and you and I have both experienced varying levels of this, it's like, too much. I can't even with this. I can't process all
for sure,
this wall,
for sure.
This wall of loud capital letters coming at me.
You know what? It's very possible that, like, based on like the interviews with Gordon and Dalton, it sounds like even the winners themselves were like hard thumbs downs on EOE before the game began. Even though Jeff has said, "Well, the winners wouldn't have come back without the Edge of Extinction."
I will say that it's possible. Like, Boston Rob could have said that. Doesn't mean.
So let's go for his little B hat next.
Right. Because it had to have been, if it did happen, it had to have been somebody that they actually really wanted to come back.
Totally. But I do think that it's like, oh man, I've lost my train of thought. But we are in lockstep about this stuff, I think.
Okay.
And I hear what you're saying about, like, Jeff sees his phone blowing up and is probably like, oh my God, this is nonsense. This is a disaster. If he's even looking at it at all. This is what I was going to say. It sounded like the winners were pretty thumbs down on EOE before the game started.
Sure.
If that attitude, like, follows into the game, and, like, it would never make the air, it would never make the edit. But if any of these winners were, like, pulling producers aside and be like, seriously? EOE? It's the all winter season. You got us. You need EOE?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? And if that's like a loud enough thing from the players themselves that producers and Jeff heard on location, then it's entirely possible that this is much ado about nothing and Edge of Extinction isn't coming back for 41 and 42. And Jeff is now hip to the fact that, yeah, people don't seem to like this and I don't like it either. And in fact, what we are doing with this end of Edge of Extinction thing is making Jeff so upset that out of spite, he's going to bring it back.
Well, that's a concern. That's a concern. And I think that what I would propose with season 41 is like, you know, how do you follow up the, you know, the biggest, maybe the biggest season in the history of the show is a season where you could like get back to a more
square
organic,
one. Yes, I
like
agree.
Flavorful. That I'm making a reference that you don't know
like,
about.
Okay. But it sounds like you're kind of like talking about like vegan survivors.
Right. This was how Nora described her game.
I figured it sounded like a Nora quote.
What I would say is that you know, hey, Jeff, you've done such an amazing job with casting the show. You find these players that are ready to go from day one, from the jump, that these players are ready to make big moves. Like you could let it breathe. Yeah, right. I mean that. I think that you've done such a great job with finding the people that know how to play the game. You don't need all this other stuff. This is just like a distraction from, you know, let us fall in love with the people that you found.
Yeah, I think one of the big problems with Survivor right now in terms of there seems to be a disconnect at least between production and our base, right? Like the people who watch Survivor and then devour podcasts, or watch Survivor and read every exit interview and whatever, and are that level of invested. But yeah. It's hard to like take the temperature of the casual fandom, because even then, like, you're looking at Survivor Facebook. These are still people going online to scream about Survivor.
It's hard to imagine that a person who is sort of casual with the show is multitasking, is playing the game on their phone, and is also saying like, boy, I wish they made the show more complicated.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say is like, it's hard to measure the casual fan, but I have a bunch of friends in my life who, like, because I was close to Survivor, they started watching the show, and like they continued on with 39 past me. So I would get a lot of my updates from them. And I was telling one of my friends that, they're like, oh, so season 40 is all winners. That's cool. I was like, yeah. He's like, did you know that the Edge of Extinction is back? And he was like, really? Mm-hmm. There is at least from one casual that I can point to. That was the reaction for that exact reason. It's like, it's so hard to follow.
Yeah.
But I think that the big disconnect is you're out there, you're making the show, and you get to see absolutely everything. If we could have live feeds of Survivor, it would be the greatest thing in the universe, and we would be able to appreciate every single nook and cranny of every single wild and crazy twist. I think that there's still problematic things baked into the premises of many of these twists, but at least we'd be able to see it through the viewpoint of the people who are making the show. You only have so much time on the clock for every episode of Survivor. And so the experience that they have out there with the more complicated structures of the seasons, I think that they tend to like those seasons more. Yeah. I think that they're really high on Ghost Island and couldn't fully understand why people, at least online, seemed to be lower on Ghost Island. And I think that's because like they've got the stuff that they're playing with. They're getting to see that. We don't get to see that. And I think that like this idea of like sticking your fingers in your ears and saying, well, everyone who's tweeting at me is a critic and not a creative, is really doing a disservice to the feedback loop, and really doing a disservice to, actually engaging with people who are giving like level-headed, calm, I'm obviously not describing myself, level-headed and calm explanations for why a thing isn't working for them, why they think a thing might be different. Yeah. I think that that's just something that's hard, and I can understand it. You're out there in Fiji living and breathing this stuff. This is your life for the however many months that you're out there making the show, that you're gonna be invested in a way and colored by it in a way that cannot ever possibly translate to the folks back home. Mm-hmm. There needs to be more of an effort to figure out how to conquer that disconnect, because I think it's always going to be there unless the effort is undertaken. Mm-hmm. One of the many things that needs to change behind the scenes.
And, you know, this was totally not the conversation that I anticipated to come in and have here today. But just if I could add one last note that, you know, I know that people want to produce the show, want to come up with more stuff to throw in there. So, you know, you always have something. Every single thing that you throw in there doesn't have to be some sort of thing involving the vote, blocking the vote, extra votes, cancel votes, nullify idols. And, I think the international versions of the show have shown that, you know, a jar of cookies can do, you know, just as much as like extra vote. And I think that that is the kind of stuff that plays with the audience. I think is like is much more relatable and funny and memorable than all this other stuff going on with all the votes. But Josh, we have so much to get to here today. One thing before we get into talking about TEOS. So many people have asked that, do you think is it possible mm-hmm. that there could be a return of the wand off? Is that now? I know that you
know, it's funny. I haven't seen that take at all in the last 2 months. No one has tweeted that at me at
and
all.
And so that the wand off the Survivor song parody contest, which that was created by Josh Wigler and was brought into existence during Survivor Heroes versus Healers versus Hustlers, became a staple of Rob as a podcast and on the Wiggle Room. And while everybody understood the reasons why you didn't want to talk about Survivor anymore, that there was a hole left in the hearts of many Survivor fans in the fall of last season. And so many people have been hoping for a return for the Wanda. And I know you've been reticent to sort of, you know, hint out what your feelings are. But Josh... Sure. I have a little bit of a proposition for you.
Oh God. Oh my God. Are you about to propose to me on a live podcast in front of millions of viewers at home? What am I going to say?
Well, this isn't a Carolina David Murphy thing.
Oh no. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you got to go full Murphy.
No,
got
to go no full Murphy. Murphy. But no full Murphy. Josh, that, you know, we have done the wand off for this is going on 3 years.
Yes.
And we have done many, many a song parody, you and me and Wanda and Casey Kasem. And we've gone through the wand off so many times, but this is such a big thing that we have never done the wand off
winners.
All winners, huge.
Even returning players other than EOE, right?
With a
side order of Robin Sandra. That was another reason why I was so mad. The 39 wand off was lit.
Yeah,
it was lit.
It was off to a great start.
It was.
But Josh, what I would propose to you would be perhaps a limited engagement. To have
okay, so now we're going like quarter Murphy,
quarter Murphy, yes. which I mean, but you know, if the shoe fits,
yes.
So Josh, a season 40 wand off to end the wand off.
Oh,
that
gosh.
Is what I'm proposing to you, and I would like you to consider it while you listen to this.
Oh God.
Wand off with me one more time. Six times is really enough for Josh and Casey. Wand off with me one more time, and then this thing can go to bed on the Wiggle Room.
Oh, God.
Those parodies, the listeners Oh, Wiggler, Wiggler, how was I supposed to know that something wasn't right here? Oh, Wiggler, Wiggler, I shouldn't have let you go. And now you're out of sight, yeah. Show me how you want it to be. Tell me, Wiggler, cause I need to know why. Because my loneliness is killing me. I must confess, I still believe. When I'm not with you, I lose my mind. Give me a sign. Hit me, Casey, one more time.
That's a full-on montage.
I'm feeling so free. One more time, Rob, Josh, and Casey. Wandoff's got me feeling so free. One more time, season 40. Wandoff's got me feeling so free. I don't like the habit that'll be. Wandoff's got me feeling so free.
Yes.
We're not gonna wand off for Tony.
Yes.
Wand off's got me feeling so free.
Robert!
Come on and wand off with me. Wand off's got me feeling so free. One more time, season 40. One more time.
Oh, God.
We're gonna end it. One more time, Wigglers Wombats. One more time, we're gonna end it. One more time.
Oh my
we
God.
Can end it. One more time, six times is enough. One more time on the Wiggle Room.
One more time. Josh.
Jeez.
One final wand off this season.
Wand offs at war.
To end the wand off.
Wombats at war. Wombats at war. Sorry. Some inside how the sausage gets made. Rob and I were supposed to start recording at like 2 o'clock, and you sent me a text message being like, just give me a minute. I need like 5 to 10 more minutes. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. I don't have a heart out today. We can go
so
for as long as
I was scared that my wife was going to come upstairs.
Now you know what it feels like.
Yeah.
It's awful. It's awful. I
would
sang
not have
into
gotten
the microphone
babe.
So
I would not
many
have gotten
times.
Babe. What are you doing? What is wrong with you?
It's so mortifying to do them. It really, really, really is. And I have to say, I felt very embarrassed listening to you serenade me just now. If I was in high school and like I was getting dropped mm-hmm. off by my parents mm-hmm. and I'm 16 years old and they're like, say I love you back. I'm like, Mom! That's how I felt listening to that. So, of course, we have to do it. We got to do it. I'm in. One more time. One last ride with the wand off. For season 40, and then we can exercise Casey. We can free him from Ghost
Casey,
Island.
Casey, you are free.
Like the genie at the end
yes.
of Aladdin. First, we have to woo Princess Jasmine. We got to get our Prince Ali on. We got to woo. Yeah. No, yes. Yes, obviously. And people have asked me about it a lot over the last several months. And like, I have not had a good answer, because like, I didn't even want to like really even think about, once I had that gift of like people being like, yo, take a minute, leave the podcast. It's totally fine. Life will go on and everything will be great. It was such a relief and it was such a burden lifted off of me. And I really took advantage of the opportunity to just not think about Survivor. And so I would keep getting that question. And of course, I was also asking myself that question, but I really tried not to engage in it until at least after I was back from my really long trip. And that same day that I saw those black and white photos, I was like, yeah, I think we probably got to do the wand off, right? Like, I mean, it's season 40 and like, is Survivor perfect? Absolutely not. Is anything perfect? Absolutely not. Is the world on fire right now? Quite literally, yes, in certain parts of the world mm-hmm. and certainly existentially. And is, you know, I asked myself a few questions. Will I get joy from doing this? Because, of course, I'm selfish, and so I have to be the first person I ask that question of. And the answer was a pretty
You're
clear
Marie
yes.
Kondoing the wand off.
You know, I will get joy from the wand off. Will other people get joy from doing the wand off again? Yes. People will get joy from doing the wand off again. Is there something tangibly good that can be done from doing the wand off again beyond just, you know, having it be this joyful, fun way to distract ourselves from the calamities of the world? I believe the answer to that is yes, and we can talk about that in a little bit. And then the fourth one was, can I do all of this without risking my mental health and staying sane to some degree and maintaining a healthy relationship with Survivor? And I'm a little bit shaky on the answer to this question, but I feel much more stable about it.
Yeah.
If we're kind of all going into this on the same page, let's do this one more time. One more season of the wand off. Let's rock this thing all the way through the finish line. Let's have a really good time doing it. And then let's put it to bed. I don't think that I ever told the story publicly of how the wand off was created. I don't know that I have.
I don't know.
Have I even told you this story before? I don't know that I have. Depends. Actually, I'm pretty sure that I haven't, because I would have been very afraid to tell you this story. So the Wand Off, it came out in 35. Famously, Wanda was showing up, and Wanda issued the challenge to people to challenge her in a song parody competition every week, thinking that like one or two people would step up to the plate. And the gag was going to be every single week, Wanda was going to sing some variation of Paparazzi. And people eventually would get so sick of it that they would finally get sick of the Wanda voice, and I would have an excuse to leave Survivor podcasting. I was tired of it then. I was tired of it for Triple H. I wanted to do one last funny recurring bit of Survivor comedy and then limp off with First One Out under my belt and this final stupid podcast. Comedy gag. And what ended up happening instead was the Wand Off was born. And the Wand Off was lit. And the Wand Off was hilarious. And the Wand Off was divisive, but it was hilarious. And for the people that it amused them greatly. Me, most of all, I truly feel. And it completely revitalized my feelings about Survivor back then for at least a time. Mm-hmm. And really kept me on the podcast. And, it all stems from Triple H. Ryan Ulrich out on location. I interviewed him for First One Out, and the season before for Game Changers, there were no song parodies on the Wiggle Room that year, and he like really held my feet to the fire. He's like, Wanda does not get to sit out my season. Wanda has to come back. And so he really incepted that idea for me. So you got to thank Ryan for the Wand Off as well.
You used to write original Wanda songs for Survivor Ko Rong.
Right, for Ko Rong. We did it for Millennials Gen X, and we just didn't do it for Game Changers. And so it seemed like it would be a fun thing to do, and it would be a fun way to go out back then. But instead it just like turned the lights back on. I'm ready to with everybody on board, I'm ready to turn those lights off. And I think that we can spend the next several months in the process of shutting down and selling the house. And I think that we'll have a really, really fun time doing it. And I just think that there's no way that we can't do a Wand Off when Tony's back on Survivor. I mean, like, for any one of these people. But of course, the King of the Jungle. So I'm really excited to do it. And of course, it's a yes. It's a big yes for me.
Okay. Josh, you created something beautiful with the Wand Off, and I think that what is so wonderful about it is that, you know, you and I get to talk about these things, and what I think that is amazing about this medium, podcasting in itself, and I think that everything that's been a success on Rob as a podcast is when we end up, you know, we're doing something on the show, but also the listeners are involved, and it's the fan participation, which I think really, you know, creates the communal feeling. And I think that's one of the reasons why the Wand Off is so beloved, because it you know, involves the audience, and it's voting. We're getting the opinion of the audience. And so I think that it does really, you know, create a bond amongst us. And I think that you probably underestimate the impact that it has on so many people, and, you know, brightening up so many days. I'm sure you get the messages of people like that are like walking down the street and just, you know, can't breathe because in a good way that they,
it's so fun to hear that. It really is. And like it, you know, the type of work that you and I have signed on to do with our lives, like, is the type of work that a lot of people would say, like, oh, I would do anything to get to cover TV for a living, or get to talk about nonsense for hours on end. And listen, I'm grateful that this is my job and this is my line of work, getting to cover this stuff. But there could be times where it feels like, this is what I've chosen to do. What does it mean? I'm you know, breaking down a television show. I'm the latest like hour long podcast about the same 45 minute episode of TV that's already been discussed 9 ways to Sunday Burquest at this point. And, there have been times where it can be really hard to find meaning. And so like it's a high class complaint. But it's my life, and in my life, like, I can often feel like, what am I doing? Like, there's like other stuff that I could be using my brain for to help people. And then I will get those types of messages that you're describing of people just like in stitches, or even people who I've met at know-it-alls who've either had like medical scares themselves or family members have had medical scares, and they're just in a tough spot somewhere in their life. And they'll come up to me and tell me like with like specific references to things that you and I had said on a podcast that I have no recollection of whatsoever, that was something that got them through it. And I've tried to, you know, I'll always walk away from those interactions feeling like what I'm doing does matter. But it could be easy to like let the noise of someone being offensive on Twitter or on Reddit, like taking a shot below the belt at you, like even if that's like rarer, it can feel louder and more hurtful than the nice stuff. And I've tried really hard since all of this stuff happened, to really focus in on, no, this stuff does matter. The world is tough, and what we're doing is providing some light for people, when even if they aren't having an especially dark time, even if they're just having a boring day, it's one thing that they'll remember, that they were driving down the highway and they were taking a sip of coffee and something came on and they spat it all over their windshield and hopefully they're safe. Hopefully you're safe. But you know, or like you're driving your kids to school and they're bopping to a jam from the wand off in the backseat of the car, and you're looking in the rearview mirror and you're laughing at how ridiculous your kid looks. That does matter, and it does mean something. And the wand off is not a nothing thing to put together. I really have the best job in it. I get to show up and I laugh, and that's it. The people who make these songs, you are spending so much time putting this stuff together, really just to make other people laugh, and it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. But Rob, you have a really hard job on your side of the wand off, and you know, I don't take my hat off to you enough on it. I think at least publicly of what you have to do to wrangle songs together, and the team that you have that helps you do this, curating the songs, coming up with all of the ridiculous puns, screening the songs to make sure that they are appropriate play on the podcast. You probably spend hours on.
I do get a lot of help from Randy Neupel, who does the first pass of the wand off before I come in to do it. And it's sometimes tough because it's an embarrassment of riches, and sometimes it's tough because maybe it's a lighter week and it's not an embarrassment of riches. So, but neither thing are easy.
Yeah. So I think It's been such a blast, and I'm really excited for the evolution of RHAP. And there's been some really amazing voices in the Survivor community who've been speaking louder and more often recently. And I'm really excited to get to become just like a special guest star who can pop up maybe with a wand off in tow for future seasons. But I do think that like the timing is right now for let's celebrate what we've had. Let's have it one more time. And then let's see what the future holds for both Survivor as a show, as a franchise, and even more importantly to me, RHAP, because this community you've built, Rob, is just absolutely incredible. It's meant the world to me, and I'm, you know, I haven't gone anywhere. I've been very firmly on the scripted side of things, and I'm not going anywhere anytime soon when it comes to that. But to be back here on RHAP proper with you for the next several weeks, for 40 means a lot to me. And I know it's controversial to some people. And if like you think, that I said what I said and walked away and, oh God, he's coming back for Winners at War because it's the All-Stars and he can't resist it. Well, A, you're partly right. So I can't argue with it. And, you know, somebody, on Reddit, which, they said that it seems a little scummy to like do, you know, say what he said and then leave and then come back for this. I think a harsh word, but I don't necessarily disagree with the premise.
I would.
Well, I would say that like I have found peace with my answer to it. I feel good about where I'm at with it, and I understand that not everybody will, and that's totally fine. Life is short, and you feel whatever you got to feel about
anything.
And I
invite you to skip the Josh podcast set.
Yeah, for sure.
You don't have to listen to it.
There's so many Survivor podcasts out there. Don't listen to me. Please don't, you know, but I get it. And I understand, that perspective, because it's not only something that I've wrestled with. It's frankly something I'm still wrestling with. I don't think that for me, that there was going to be an answer to any of this that would have felt like a 100% yes, this is the right thing to do. That's what I'm talking about when I say like, will you be able to do this without psychic harm to yourself? And the answer is like, I think I can. But there will be that nagging element to me. And if you're feeling on this at all, is this is pretty hypocritical of Wiggler to be talking about Survivor again.
Yeah.
You know, Wombat's hat off to you.
Right.
You're and totally, absolutely allowed to have that
let's
opinion.
Make a pact.
I'm not necessarily
sure I disagree. We're not going to worry about those people. Okay. We're here for the people. We're here for
Look,
the people.
I've tightened
that,
up my social.
That are,
listen,
that are,
I've tightened up my social media yeah. intake has been tightened. I will not be popping up on those Reddit boards for this yeah. season. I wish you all well. Genuinely, fantastic people out on Reddit. There are enough bad actors that I just don't need to be exposed to that. So I will right. be saying goodbye to the Survivor subreddit for the season.
Let it be for the fans.
My Twitter filter is pretty strong, so yeah. I think I'll be all right here.
Okay. All right. Josh, that one last thing that you talked about, how, you know, was there a way to do some good
yes.
in the
yes.
world with the wand off? You said that there was. What did you mean by that?
So this was very important to me. Again, to break the fourth wall, you and I have been talking about this for a little bit.
it would be very outright rude if I just like, you know,
you're like, what?
Just came you out know? And yeah, blindsided you.
Just put me on the spot. Yeah, I know. But we've been talking about this, and it was something I said to you pretty early on. Was, you know, especially there've been a lot of people who wanted the Wigglers Wombats hats. And they are just hats. They're blue. They're navy
they're
blue
hats
with orange. They're navy blue hats with a gray underside to the brim with orange stitching that's in like some sort of athletic narrow font that says Wigglers mm-hmm. Wombats. If you really want to make one, it wouldn't be so hard to do it.
No
but knock-offs. I think that there is something about. Well, there is the Wogglers mm-hmm. Wimbats that Torbjorn mm-hmm. gave me, which I still treasure to this day. But there have been people who have wanted the hats. And like, I just do not feel comfortable. Like, I don't know. Like, there have been times where I've been like, look at that money on the table, Rob. Think about all
hat
the
money.
Treasure we could scoop up if we just got that sweet, sweet hat money. Like in my more mercenary days of the week, I've certainly been in that place. But I've, this being the final season of the Wand Off, enough people out there who have been asking for a Wombat's hat. How do I get one? If I can't sing, I will buy one. I've just heard that from enough people, that I think there is a way to do that I feel good about. So if you'll let me, Rob, I'll just share
sure.
some of like the actual details of what we're going to do. So we are getting, 100 Wigglers Wombat's hats made. They will be for sale on, Rob Has a Podcast's store. I don't know what the URL for that is, Rob.
Yeah, we'll get it out once they're ready.
They're not ready yet, so this is it's a future thing. So put your alerts on so that they don't sell out like
yeah.
hotcakes. And we're gonna sell them, and all the profits on the hats are going to go to an organization that I have vetted with a bunch of people who matter to me, who work in this space, who have vouched for this as a great organization, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. Obviously, I talk a lot about mental health and my own place with mental health on the podcast a lot. It's a topic that's near and dear to me because I'm fighting it every day. So the proceeds for the Wombat's hats will go to NAMI, the National Alliance of Mental Illness. And we're also going to be making 100 hats of a new hat. We made this for the Lindelof, which is the lost wand off that we've done on Down the Hatch that Colin Latchford won. And I made this hat and I meant to get it sent to him. And I really thought that I did. And instead it came to me and I was like, oh no, this is supposed to go to Colin. I was looking at the hat. I was like, this one's a good hat.
This is
a really good hat. It's got a wombat logo that's designed by a friend of Mark Douglas. Great friend of the podcast.
I like that little wombat's logo.
No, you will. It's good. It's a black trucker hat. It's got a gray front with a wombat logo on it and says Wombat Nation. I posted a picture of it on Instagram a few weeks ago. If you want to take a look at Round Howard there, we're going to make 100 of those. We're going to sell those, and all of the profits on that will go to the Australian Red Cross,
really
for
cool.
the wildfire relief in Australia. You've been hearing these stories about wombats saving the day in Australia, which is, you know, people send this stuff to me all the time. It's really amazing. And Australia is such a huge, you know, a huge piece of the heart of Survivor Nation, let alone Wombat Nation. So that is something that matters very much to me. So those are two ways that we're going to be able to actually get hats to people and also, put that money out into the world. In a way that's going to be really positive for a couple of organizations. So, I don't know if anyone's going to want to buy them. They're not cheap. There's $40
bucks
a hat.
That's the plan. $40 for the hat, each one, for season 40. But we're going to be able to put together, a sizable donation to, those two causes at the end of the season. And so, that's going to be, a really nice thing that you put together, Josh.
So if you really want one, it's not inexpensive, but it's going to go to a good cause. We're not seeing that money other than the production and the shipping costs on that. Everything else is going to go to those organizations. And I'm really psyched about that. It makes me feel really good if we're able to gin up some money for that stuff. So, that's where we're at, I guess, as we're heading into season 40 with some stuff on the
money. My stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Before we talk some TEOS, we still have time to do that today?
Yeah, I've got no hard out. We can be here for 10 hours.
We can cherry pick. We can cherry pick the best stuff as we go.
It's your schedule. Whatever works.
Go back and listen. Yeah. But first, let me just take a moment and thank a sponsor for this episode of the podcast. Brand new sponsor to the podcast. One that we're excited to have on board. They are Undercover Tourist. Undercover Tourist.
I thought you said tourist, like the astrological sign.
No, tourist. Undercover Tourist.
Okay, cool. Got it.
And you need to know about them if you are planning a theme park vacation to Disney or Universal. Now, Josh, are you a big theme park guy?
I love a good theme park. When I come out to LA as often as possible, I will try to put a Disney trip on the agenda. Yeah.
I mean, people
enjoyed Star Wars World. That was fun.
People love Disney. A friend of mine even had a bachelor party at Disney World.
I heard.
If you can believe that.
I can. It's hard to believe, but I've heard about this.
A grown up, like in his 30s.
I heard it was a fish.
Yeah. So look, my kids, they're always trying to get back to Disneyland living in Southern California. Planning a vacation is hard and can be overwhelming. I want to know how to save money and save time. Who doesn't? That's where Undercover Tourist comes in, because they are able to get discounts on tickets for all the theme parks, that they've got the exact same tickets to attractions you know and love for less, with no catch. Save up to $85 on Disney World Florida tickets, up to $120 on Disneyland California tickets, $150 on Universal Florida tickets. They've got other popular destinations as well in San Diego, Washington, D.C., New York City, even ski lift tickets. If you're going to resorts like Vail, Keystone, or Lake Tahoe, it is hassle-free. They will send you an email.
Not even hassle back.
Yeah. Send you an email, or you could get physical tickets to skip the lines and go straight to the gate. And 90-day ticket returns with friendly, knowledgeable agents. They are an authorized seller as well, with 20 years of quality service providing theme park and attraction tickets at discounted prices and an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau. So find out what to do and when, saving you 4 hours a day, not standing in line and zigzagging across the park with their park plans. They've got special wait times and more. You got to check out Undercover Tourist. Undercover Tourist is the most trusted name for theme park tickets. Start planning your next theme park vacation now by visiting undercovertourist.com/RHAP. And there's an additional discount when you use RHAP on top of the big savings already offered through Undercover Tourist. That's undercovertourist.com/RHAP. All right. Now, Josh, are you ready to go back? Go back with me. To TEOS for the first time, I feel like, at least since Sandra played in Game Changers.
Yeah, didn't we do like a season 20 re-listen?
Yes, we re-listened.
Guess what? We'll have to do like a re-listen to that re-listen eventually, because I have no idea what we said on the re-listen of the chapter.
But let's go back. Let's go back to the evolution of strategy.
Part one.
Wow.
Living on the
just
edge.
Like, yeah. Basket. Oh, no. God, no!
Sorry.
All right, I quit. I quit again.
All right, there you go.
What if that's the recurring gag this season? I quit every episode of the podcast.
Big shout out to Paul Koch, the composer who put together the music for the Evolution of Strategy.
So, what a bop. What a bop
that
was.
It was a real bop. So, way back when, back in the fall, we had asked a number of our listeners if they wanted to help us go back and find clips for season 40 people and go back to the Evolution of Strategy and pull some clips for us about things that might be interesting or things that we might want to comment on that, you know, see, you know, bad takes that aged poorly, great takes that were like, wow, boy, we were really on the nose with that one. So we've got an assortment of different clips that we want to get to today. Mm.
A poo-poo platter, Chinese menu, as you liked to say so often about the Evolution of Strategy.
Yes, yes. So much to do here. So we could bounce around. We can go in chronological order. Josh, are you interested? Do you have any particular way you want to attack this?
Well, I feel like anything that is of relevance to the upcoming season. One of the things that's really exciting to me is that we're talking about the all winter season of Survivor coming up. Survivor, wow, Winners at War. I am so happy that we have the receipts on your ranking of the winners. I mean, like, you now have some wait for it wiggle room when it comes to the winners of the 30s, of which there are so many that are competing on 40. But as far as like ranking the winners, you have official locked in rankings as we're moving into season 40. I think a lot of that stuff's going to be really fun to revisit either now or in the weeks and months ahead.
Okay. All right. Let's go through some of this stuff, chronologically.
Okay. Great. Let's do it.
All right. You and I, once upon a time, talked about Ethan Zahn when we talked about the chapter 3 of the Evolution Strategy, available at evolutionstrategy.com, where the first chapter of Borneo is always free.
Always free.
And so is Nicaragua and Guatemala.
In the Guatemala chapter, if you know the codes.
There you go. All right.
Got the keys. Yeah.
So we talked about the way Ethan won the game.
I got to say, just because I haven't had a chance to like officially comment on any of like the individual players who are going to be coming back for season 40. But my experience with finding out about the cast for season 40 was the same way that everybody else experienced it, or most everybody else experienced since I wasn't out there, was I got I saw the Redmond thing drop on a Saturday morning or whatever it was, with the names of all the different players who were coming out. And everybody had heard the rumors that it was going to be winners at that point. But you now had like the list, and I had like three immediate reactions. And one of those immediate reactions was, holy crap, Ethan is playing Survivor again? Mm-hmm. Are you serious? And I had like, I really had like a big, amazing, like Survivor nerd meltdown when I saw him on that cast list. And like knee jerk immediately emailed Gordon Holmes, who was on site at that point. And I said, I just have to say this out loud to lock it and load it before anything begins. Ethan Zahn, winner pick for Survivor 4.
Wow.
So I am all the way in. Jews supporting Jews as I shall disavow the ham and go ham for Ethan Zahn as my winner pick for Survivor 40, Edge of Extinction. I mean, Winners at War.
Okay. All right. So you and I talked about Ethan's win in his original season back in the Evolution of Strategy, chapter 3. Here's a little bit of that conversation.
So we haven't necessarily done too much justice to Ethan as the winner of Survivor. Thoughts on Ethan before we talk about some of the few highlights from the reunion show?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's not too much to say. It's great that the nice guy wins. I think that's, you know, having Tina win out back, showing that there's a different way to play from Hatch. I think Ethan presents yet another way to win this game, which is just by being like the solid guy. Just be solid, be reliable, be an asset to your allies. You know, have a queer mind, full heart, can't lose attitude. And I think Ethan embodies that. And I think it's a good template for some future winners that come in. I tend to gravitate towards towards schemers. I tend to gravitate towards people who are in control of the game, even if it's not, you know, in such a flashy way. I like people who really are dictating the flow of the game, and I don't think Ethan falls into that category, but he's super solid. He's a really, really solid player and such a nice guy, and it's a great win. I think having Ethan win as the third winner of Survivor, I think having the nice guy win is a good thing.
Josh, what I wanted to ask you is, you know, we talk a lot about like the story of the season and narrative, especially here in the Wiggle Room. For Ethan, how much is that going to help him that the narrative of the Ethan win has always been, and the nice guy won, nice guy finishes first?
I think it'll carry him actually for a little while. I can't imagine that there aren't people out there who are going to be, especially like what we're reading is that they were divided between men and women in the pregame. Yeah. And so I think like one of the reactions that many of the people are going to have was, you know, for both the men's camp and the women's camp was one of those three reactions that I mentioned, which is, wow, Hatch and Tina aren't here. And I think that like in part and parcel of that, it's going to be like, oh my God, Ethan's here. You know, his journey speaks for itself. There's what we said back then, in the evolution of strategy about, you know, the nice guy finishes first. And that is a big piece of his narrative. But then there's like everything that came after his win. And I'm not talking about Survivor All-Stars, which I think is a deadly thing that people will probably overlook about Ethan and the way that he played from the bottom, which was very impressive, as we've talked about. I think that the fact that he's survived what he has survived in his life, you know, the cancer diagnosis and being really sick and overcoming that and being healthy enough to pass medical and play Survivor in its 20th year and its 40th season is a pretty amazing thing. And if he is anywhere even remotely presenting the same nice guy ethos and trustworthy, sturdy Ethan, as he did all the way back then, I think there's just about no reason to get rid of Ethan until you're getting into the later parts of the game. So Ethan, for me, we'll have to like turn some things on to turn some things on. Once you get to a certain point of the game, I think that the modern era of Survivor could reward those things that he needs to activate, challenge wins. I could see him being good in the fire at the end. But I do think that he could be targeted eventually for being a really nice player. But I think that his reputation within the game of Survivor and the way that he won makes him a very attractive ally for not just the short term, but for at least like the medium long term. I think Ethan's going to make it pretty deep.
Yeah, I feel the same way about Ethan. Let's talk a little bit about Danny Boatwright.
It really blew me away to see Ethan back. I can't stress enough. Like I was out to dinner with a bunch of friends to a Chinese restaurant, in fact, in New York, and I saw that article pop up with Ethan's name on it. And then the other reaction I had was, Amber and Rob, the audacity, and I love it, of the two of them coming back together. Like that really blew me away. So if you wanted to get what my three hot takes were when I saw the season 40 cast, it was, holy shit, Ethan. Holy crap, both Rob and Amber are back. That is such a baller thing to do, and clearly they're both going to get voted out immediately. But who cares, because it's so fun. And then the other was like, I can't believe that Hatch and Tina are in here.
Yeah, and like, and then
anyway,
a little bit
Danny
of like,
Boatwright,
and Danny.
Yeah, I mean that was exciting too. That was, I think that they'd been rumored at that point to a certain degree, but to see that they were, like officially locked and loaded back, it's exciting. Look, there's a lot of people who I would have loved to have seen come back that are not coming back. You know, I think based on some of the material that we got in Winners at Peace, the podcast that you and Mike Bloom recorded. That I think that there were a few that really the Survivor really missed out on bringing some of these gems back. I think that they should have. I think that at the very least, Vesepia deserved a call.
Yeah.
I do think that that's BS. And I think that that's a really big missed opportunity to not bring V back. But to see Danny and Yule, these are two players who I never expected to see again, for sure.
You and I, once upon a time, talked about the idea of Danny on an all-winner season back in the Evolution of Strategy Chapter 11, all about Survivor Guatemala. Here is a little piece of that conversation.
Danny Boatwright received the call to return, but declined due to wanting to appear on an all-winner season.
Whoa, buzz. I think the second part of that is true, though.
I think that the second part of her wanting to appear on an all-winner season.
Josh, did Danny Boatwright turn down a opportunity to play before to only come back for All Winners? Was that her stipulation?
And if so, kudos to Danny for playing the long game.
Long game.
Bodes well for her upcoming appearance on season 40. Now imagine that all of that is true, that she really was holding out for a Winners at War, a WoW appearance, as I call it, and she just like gets voted out immediately. That would suck. That'd be really rough. That'd be
you
really
see,
tough.
She's Jeff Probst's winner pick.
Is she his winner pick?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I think he's just trying to earn points in the spotlight. I don't believe it. I don't think he really thinks so.
Well,
I don't
who's
think
he really earn points with?
I think like that's like a cool thing. Like, oh, the diehards will think it's really cool. Jeff Probst picked Danny. No one expected that. Yeah, I think so. That's not real. That's not real. He picks Danny as his winner pick. He thinks Danny is going to win Winners at War.
Yeah.
I have a hard time buying that.
It was a surprising pick.
It's a surprising pick. It's a very surprising pick. I think Danny a chance to go deep, but I think chances to win pretty slim in my mind.
Okay. All right. How about Yule? You and I debated a little bit about Yule in the evolution of strategy for chapter 13, Cook Islands, in terms of how great of a winner is Yule Kwan. Let's play the clip and come back and talk about it.
All right. Of course, we have Yule.
We have Yule. We have Yule.
Who's going to go on to win the season? An incredibly smart guy, very athletic guy, a little stiff.
Maybe this is an argument for most boring Survivor winner.
Most boring Survivor winner.
No, I think he's good. I think he's pretty good.
I think he's good.
He's very quiet. He's very reserved. There are some moments where they get him to come out of his shell that are pretty good. There's one reward challenge in particular that's going to be pretty fun to talk about. I love Yule. I think Yule is a really great player. I know that a lot of people think that he's overrated, and there's certainly, you know, things that we need to talk through in terms of how much does the idol benefit him? How much does that impact our view of him as a Survivor winner? But when we get to the end of this chapter and we start talking about your winner rankings, Rob, I'm going to be very interested to see how Yule factors into that, because I think for the first time in a little while, we have a contender for a top five spot, if not number one. So it'll be fun to talk about Yule.
Yeah, I think the argument for Yule should be framed out. Is he really great or is he just great? The people who are going to really knock down Yule, I think. This is why we can't have nice things.
Right, yeah.
So he ended up doing very well in the winner rankings after the full rewatch of the season.
And I think in that moment you put him number two behind Westman, and you said it was Kirk and Spock. Which is such a bummer that Westman can't be back for 40, because to see that play out would have been an absolute delight.
Yeah. Josh, any thoughts on Yule preseason?
It's still surreal. It's still surreal that Yule Kwan is back on Survivor. Really, especially like the deeper he got into his career, and clearly he's done quite well for himself, maybe controversially so to some people. I just never thought that he would want to do it. And I am a little concerned about him, because I think that he's somebody who, again, reading all the Dalton and Gordon stuff, which is so great. They got really great material out of everybody. One thing that keeps popping up is a lot of people are like, deny about the pregame stuff. People are really like, down the line, there was no pregame. No one talked to anybody. Like, come on. Mm-hmm. Come on, really, guys? But like one person who I believe that with is Yule. I fully believe that the amount of people that Yule would have talked to pregame, pretty limited. And he is really from a bygone era and is pretty disconnected from Survivor. And then the thing that you remember about him is that he was like this razor sharp, super smart, very analytical guy that I think that like he's been talking about in his pregame press that he wants to like play just the loyalty card and I'll be a good number for you, and like, oh, I don't really know what's going on in Modern Survivor anymore. Like, man, you are not going to be able to get away with that. That is not something that, like, there's no way that anyone is going to play ball with a dumbed down Yule. Is not something that's going to be possible. So I hope that he is as sharp as I think he is and is going to recognize quickly that like that's not going to work. People are going to see me for who I am. because if he starts to like try to like sell himself as somebody like, oh, I don't really know what's going on, I could just be a number. Like, yo, Kwan, you're not just going to be a number, man. There's no universe where that's the case.
Yeah. I think he's got in a tough spot, Yul.
I think it's hard. I hope that he does really well. Is it possible for like a almost 20-way first place finish? I guess that's what the Edge of Extinction's for.
Yeah.
I really do hope for a good run for Yul. I think for Yul to come back all these years later and really play a dominant game with this field would be pretty exciting.
Yeah. Josh, I want to think a little bit about Sandra, because you and I, you know, talked so much about Sandra in the Evolution of Strategy, and this is going to be a clip that is from Heroes versus Villains, Chapter 20. Some say the greatest chapter of all of TEOS. And you and I talked about what would happen if Sandra returned. Now, we, with the benefit of foresight and hindsight, are able to listen back to what we said about Sandra's return after she has already returned for a third time on a different season, and see if any of this is still relevant for season 40.
To speak to the challenge thing again, you know, if Drake loses that first challenge or one of the first two or three, Sandra could be in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
In a way that none of the other winners I would be afraid for. I wouldn't be afraid for V. I wouldn't be certainly not afraid for V, because we saw V on a tribe that didn't win anything for a long time. I wouldn't be afraid for Jenna Maraska. I would be afraid for Sandra on a season where her tribe was striking out for, you know, the early portion of the game. I think that that's where you lose Sandra. But if Sandra is on a tribe where she can make it deep into the game, where she can make it to the merge or make it to the late stage of the pre-merge, I think she's in a really good spot. But it's those first few days on the island that I think you got to be worried about Sandra. You know, if Sandra comes back for a third time, and she's on a tribe that loses the first immunity challenge,
and has Russell.
There's a very good, you know, I know what Russell says, even taking Russell out of it, there's very good reasons to get rid of Sandra if you lose your first immunity challenge. So that's one thing that is actually, I think, a decently big strike against.
I apologize for misspeaking that. This is actually from the Pearl Islands chapter of TEOS.
We're
comparing Sandra with some of the other single-digit winners, not talking about Survivor winners at peace.
That was a pretty good chapter as well, was TEOS 7.
Yes. So, Josh, you know, you and I speculating, Sandra could be in big trouble if she's on a tribe that ends up going to some tribal councils early. Ironically enough, she ends up coming back into that same exact position that we speculated
about in Game
Changers.
Where, and she makes it relatively deep.
Yeah, and we said that, okay, well, if she can just make it to the late pre-merge, she'd be okay, which is then when she gets voted out.
Right, with the numbers disadvantage at that point, with like a declarative numbers disadvantage, with Debbie Wanner grabbing the package that was very much designed for Sandra to grab.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if only she had been aboard the USS Exile and had a moment with Cochrane.
Yeah.
You know, things probably play pretty differently. That being said,
thinking fourth dimensionally, Josh.
Yeah.
Is it possible? Could we have been wrong, but still be right?
Yeah, yes, yes. That's what I think. And I think, like Game Changers was so impressive from Sandra to like watch her play the way that she did. In some ways, like if she could have like, if she and Tony could have like figured out a way to like just like get past their shit, that probably would have been the better way to go. But they were not able to do that. And that's largely Tony's fault. So you can't really blame Sandra too much there, I think. But I don't think it does her any favors to have that performance under her belt coming in for round four, which is also kind of round five. Not that she was eligible during what would have been round four IOI, but she was in every single episode of a fourth season of Survivor. She's very front of mind, and it astounds me, but apparently this is the case, that from the press day, as you're seeing in these interviews, players are looking out across the ocean and they can see the Rob and Sandra statues. They are seeing the Rob and Sandra statues. And at this point, I believe that the word was already out there that IOI was
somebody
was in existence.
Had leaked that.
That had leaked. And so that was already going to be bad. But it's one thing to like read that, and another thing to see gigantic mythical statues erected in the honor of Boston Rob and Sandra, who you were about to play against.
Although I wonder if the leak with the set, like, I don't know if you could make out from, you know, miles away of, you know, what those heads were. If you didn't already know
without the leak, without the leak, maybe I have no idea. Obviously, I wasn't there, so I have no clue. But that's bad planning, and I think that's really and I know that those statues were enormously difficult to get made and located and built into Island of the Idols in the first place. So to you know, and it's like what 2 weeks between the end of filming that and the beginning of filming 40.
But we don't have a giant tarp.
I mean, like something. Yeah, something. Like, I know that it's going to take weeks to get that unbuilt, but like, you can't have press day with those things visible to the other players and not expect people to like, who probably already had a chip on their shoulder about Rob and Sandra at that point, to only have like a boulder on their shoulder at that point moving forward. So I think that Sandra's Game Changers reputation, and now that you see her gigantic survivor totem on the island as well, these are things that are only reinforcing the narrative of Queen Sandra, and those things that we talked about all the way back in TO7 of Sandra is in danger in those situations where you know, your tribe is going to tribal a lot in the early stages. I actually do think that that heightens my expectation coming into season 40 is Sandra goes home pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page on that. Josh, we were talking about the giant heads. The matching giant head belongs to one Boston Rob.
Right.
After the conclusion of season 22, after our rewatch in the Evolution Strategy, you and I speculated about, is this it? Could we ever see more Boston Rob on Survivor? And this is that conversation.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you thought that maybe he would be open to like a winter season. If they do the winter season, if they can tempt him with some kind of offer to come back, do you think that that would be exciting enough to go up against, you know, the elite class, go up against the winners, you know, see how he does in that field? But then thinking about that even more, like, it didn't even seem like he enjoyed Heroes Villains, and he was playing, you know, Survivor Legends at that point. So I don't know. I also wouldn't wouldn't rule out round five for Boston Rob, but you're right. You know, he does seem like he's tired. He's tired. He wanted that win. You got the sense that he only came back to Heroes Villains as a business trip. It didn't work out. He gets an opportunity to have a pretty well-structured business trip for things to go his way, for business to be booming this round. And, you know, he comes back for that. He gets the title. I don't really see too many reasons for him to want to come back.
And I don't think Rob is going to stand on his principles or anything like that. And if they wanted him to come back for a season that they were going to build around him, and they were going to like pay him like a $500,000 appearance fee and whatever, you know, again, anything's possible. But in a vacuum, I don't think Rob wants to play Survivor ever again.
How do you feel about that? You're good?
What else is left to see?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
We got it.
Yep.
We got it.
Yep.
He walks away and that's it.
Got it.
We got it.
Nailed it.
Josh,
that's pretty on.
Yeah, yeah. Pretty on point.
What else do we have to say? Got it. Nailed it.
If they ever did build a season around him, you could certainly imagine the scenario where maybe he could come back to the show.
Yeah, if you literally build his gigantic head into a season and pay him an appearance fee, he'll come back.
Yeah, I think so.
And for the winners, like, maybe you can test him
practical.
With some more money.
Yeah.
Very funny. Yeah. Very, very funny.
Yeah, in terms of playing again, I think that he is going to have his work
cut out. He got the best result he could ever get.
Yeah.
You know, Boston Rob always, he gets the final tribal council, or he gets voted out before the jury. You know, with EOE being in play, I think we'll probably finally get Boston Rob as a juror.
Maybe.
But I think that, like, it will trend towards, I think it's the even, or it's like the odd seasons that he plays on where he goes home in the earlier stage. His first season, he goes home at the start of the merge. Mm-hmm. Second season, Final Tribal. His third season, pre-merge. His fourth season, he's at Final Tribal and he wins. I think, yeah, for his fifth season, which is technically his sixth, I think that he will go home pre-merge.
Okay.
you got to get rid of Boston Rob.
Yeah, you would think so.
Especially because his giant head is across
the
way.
The one saving grace for him. That if you were going to drop the successful plan for Boston Rob is that he is sort of the captain of the team. He is the person that's leading them to victory in a couple of these early challenges. And the blueprint looks kind of like Heroes versus Villains if they don't have that tribal council where Tyson gets voted out, where he gets 5 or 6 people together. He's got a core group. They're winning in a lot of challenges and they're like on a roll. And then, Rob is able to get to the merge with some numbers. I think that looks like.
And again, I do think I don't take at face value a lot of this stuff that's being said about the pregame stuff. I think that stuff probably exists more than these people are saying. And Boston Rob is pretty well connected with a lot of the players who are playing out there. So I can imagine that he's got a little bit of an entourage that he could play with. And I do think that if some of like the people who are looked more as like titanic players of the game, like sort of like the big bombastic winners, the ones with the big glowing vote me out signs hovering over their heads, if those people can do what Tony and Sandra could not do in Game Changers, and I include both of those people in this group of people I'm talking about now, that's maybe their best
bet. Avengers.
Be the Avengers. Like if Earth's Mightiest Heroes can assemble, maybe we can undo the snap. But I think ego gets in the way of that in a game like Survivor.
Josh, you and I also debated Rob versus Kim once upon a time in season 24 of TEOS. And what would happen if Rob and Kim ever met up on Survivor? Boston Rob and Kim Spradlin. What would happen between those two players? This is back from the tail end of TEOS chapter 24.
And if they played again, I think Boston Rob is out the first time he goes to tribal council. And I think Kim could do well.
Again. Kim could win.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if Kim will ever play again.
Yeah. I don't blame her if she doesn't. First off, she's got a family. You know, she's got a really nice life. She seems like she's got a good job. And she's got this perfect game.
Yeah.
You know, it would be really fun to see her playing an all winner season or a legend season or anything like that. But she doesn't have to defend anything. You know, she's got the title and she got it handily. She got it decisively in a way that I feel like no one has ever been able to do before or since. And I think I really don't think that there is a more natural Survivor player out there. I think that she is the most naturally gifted Survivor player in the history of the game.
Josh, I'd love to get your take on Kim Spradlin going into Survivor 40. I feel like I'm less worried about Kim than I feel like the consensus is.
So it's funny because I think that this sort of this applies to a bunch of the people based on what I've been reading and some of the videos that I've seen too, is this sort of there are a lot of people who I think are not looking at their threat levels properly, their own threat levels properly, or looking at their reputations coming into this with maybe some attitude about it, where I think like maybe you shouldn't be so mad if you're actually correct about what it is you think people think about you, because I think that'll serve you well. And Kim falls into the first of those two categories.
I would agree. I don't know if she has the proper read on her threat level.
That's right. And like, one of the many reasons why Kim Spradlin is one of my all-time favorite Survivor players, and I am so excited that she's about to play again, and I'm so excited that she's about to get to play again against a group of like decisive, proven Survivor players. I think is going to be really, really fun. She's humble. She's so humble, and she is talking in these interviews about how she knows that people keep saying that she's one of the best ever play, one of the most dominant wins, but there's a lot of people who are threats out here. And I think that I'm like, middle-ish level threats. Like Kim, you're in danger, girl, if that's what you think. You know, like, if you do not quickly realize, if you're just, like, if you're being humble in an interview, and if this is part of your gift, that's one thing. And I suspect that that could be true. I believe that that's probably it. That's how much I believe in Kim Spradlin. That I think that she knows inherently. She's like, yeah, I think I'm, like, you know, I gotta keep my antenna raised for, threats, because, I have a pretty legendary win under my name. She has to be aware of her reputation in season 40, yeah. if only to detect those potential knives coming at her. But she is, and this is something I'm sure we'll talk about Tyson soon, but she is one of those players that Tyson has talked about. And this was referenced on a recent Survivor podcast that you did about how he was asked who he would want to play against, Tony or Spencer in Cagayan. And he says whichever one wins, because they won't know what it feels like to lose. They won't know what it's like to sense that danger. And that's something that Kim's never really had to worry about. You know, no one really came after Kim in any kind of like a very serious way, like a way where they were really going to shore up a serious problem for Kim. So I am concerned that Kim is one of those first time players who's coming into the game that does not know what that feels like.
Yeah.
And just pairing that with what she is saying about how, like, I think I'm like a modest threat in a big sea of threats. I think that that's very incorrect. I think people know that Kim is a dangerous player. But I having said all of that, I think I am still more tempered by just how good of a player she is, that I think that she'll be able to untangle a lot of these knots.
Yeah, I feel like that.
And I think she'll be able to go pretty deep.
She's one of the few people in my mind, I think, who's able to disarm the heat that she might have on her, even though she might not correctly see it. I just think her game is so charming and disarming that I feel like that when you're out there on the beach with her, I feel like that you're not intimidated by her. I think that is her gift, and I think that she is somebody who, yeah, people are going to be like, oh, gotta watch out for Kim, but then when she's there, it's like, I love her.
I think that's possible.
Yeah, I think she's going to be okay. I think she's going to be okay. So we'll see. I'm not going to make Kim my winner pick, but I feel
I don't think it would be crazy to make Kim your winner pick. But I think it would be flirting with disaster, because I think eventually her reputation has to catch up to her with this crew. It would be very hard to imagine that eventually people aren't like, man, we got to get rid of Kim. She's so good. But I think that she is going to be, as you say, in other words, I think she is going to be like so affable, so wonderful to be around, and I think fun to play with. Like, if you can get on the same page with her for, like, you know, an early portion of the game, that she is going to be somebody who isn't like massively unpredictable. She's got a level head. She's going to be somebody that you're going to be like excited about playing Survivor with. And I know that they're on different starting tribes. I hope that she and Parvati can both survive long enough to team up. I know that it seems like they've been talking about that in some of these interviews, and I think that would be a really fun combo to see. But there's a lot of different permutations of Kim playing with a few different players that I'd be really, really pumped to see.
Okay.
Almost nobody I'm more excited about seeing play Survivor again than Kim Spradlin.
All right. So you mentioned Parvati. Parvati is somebody who has played with a big target on her back before and has been able to evade having that big target on her back. Let's listen to this and then talk about if she could do it again.
So Parvati is back. We last talked about Parvati in, I believe it was, Survivor Cook Islands 4.
Yeah, I don't have the number in front of me, unfortunately.
I think so.
Wasn't prepared for that.
Yeah, so here we are back, and here is Parvati in Survivor Cook Islands 8.
Yeah, she is back. She is back for more Cook Islands, and very, very impressive. I was going to say fairly impressive, but very impressive that she's going to be able to get to the final three, considering how many people have guns on her this season. You know, so many people just want to take out Parvati, and it just doesn't happen.
It doesn't happen. She plays a fantastic game. We'll discuss whether this game might actually even be better than the game she played in Survivor Cook Islands 4.
Yeah, we will talk about
we'll
that.
We'll talk about that. Certainly better than the game in Survivor Cook Islands 1.
I think that is indisputable. But I have in the past, I have said that the move that she is going to pull at the JT vote, where she's going to play two idols and not play either of them on herself. I have said in the past that I think that that is the best move in Survivor history. I haven't rewatched this season since I said that, so I'm curious to see if I still feel that way when we get there. But even if I don't have it in that place anymore, I will still say that move blows my mind every time. The fact that that was able to happen is crazy.
Okay, Josh, in the real time.
Here she is going to Survivor Cook Islands 27.
Is it 27 or 28?
Oh, maybe it's 28. Maybe it's 28.
Yeah.
Coming into season 40.
That is a long-running joke from the Evolution Strategy based on, for anybody who's not a TEOS veteran, that there's like a trivia contest in Survivor Micronesia.
Yeah.
And Parvati does so bad that we speculate that does Parvati think that that Cook Islands was the first season of Survivor?
Right. right. And so every season afterwards is another Survivor Cook Islands.
And Micronesia was Survivor Cook Islands 4.
4.
Yeah. Okay. So,
oh man.
That is the amazing thing about Parvati, especially, you know, she had a target because people didn't trust her in Micronesia. She gets the, you know, the miracle. Johnny Fairplay doesn't want to be there anymore. He leaves, and then she's able to go off and win that game. Then second time back, she ends up, you know, third time playing, but it's her second time returning. She ends up then with another huge target on her back. People are like, oh, I'm not playing with Parvati. She's got Amanda. She got Suri. She got James. She got too many friends. You got to get out Parvati. And somehow she manages to not get voted out of the villains tribe and goes all the way to the final three with this huge target on her back in that game. Josh. She's done it before. Can Parvati somehow survive for a bit here with another target on her back?
Yeah, I think she can. I think she can. And you know, this is the thing, and it's one of the things when, like, I think about how Probst says there's more critics than creatives online as kind of like a defense mechanism of not listening to feedback. I think that there's an argument that the people who make the thing know the thing less well than the people who engage the thing. And my case study for that is the Evolution of Strategy and the people who know like the nooks and crannies of the Evolution of Strategy in a way that you and I, Rob, who said those words and fired off those takes, definitely do not remember vividly anymore. At least speaking for myself, one thing I do remember is being really pretty low on Parvati in the Micronesia chapter. And I don't remember where I netted out on her for the season 20 chapter. But I know that for like Micronesia, I went out and I said, like, I think, you know, Parvati's win is maybe a little overrated, that there are, you know, if she likes you, that's great. But if she doesn't like you, like, you can really feel that. And I think that's a dangerous thing, that her win is as much a testament to the Alliance, the Black Widow Brigade, as it is to Parvati. And I'm sure I said a bunch of other crap. I have no idea what I said. But what I do remember is after we had recorded season 20, there was a break in time before you and I recorded chapter 21. And what happened between recording chapter 20 and chapter 21 is I got out to location for the very first time. I went out to Cambodia for Survivor Second Chance as my first trip as press. And Parvati was the talent for the CBS EPK crew. She was the person who was doing the interviews with all the second chancers. And I got to meet Parvati and I got to engage with Parvati a little bit. And I got to, like, you know, drink with the members of the press and with Parvati. And we got to, like, you know, joke around with Parvati. And I got to see her interact with Jeff Probst. And I got to just see her in her element, and got to, like, hang out with her to a certain degree and got to experience firsthand what it's like to be around Parvati. And the answer to that is, she's just such a magnetic person.
Yeah.
She's just somebody who is, you really, really do want her to like you. And she either, does like you because she, like, meets you where you are and she finds something interesting about you and she is able to engage that, or she is pretty good at faking that. And in either direction, having spent time with her, like, I'll eat all the hat that, you know, I'll eat all 200 of the hats we're going to make. And say,
it's an,
like,
expensive lunch.
It's an expensive lunch. It really is. I'll still donate the money. but I get it. I fully get it.
Yeah.
I think she's playing here with, a bunch of people who know her record, a bunch of people who know what she's all about, who know what she does. She is well connected in this game, I think, to a certain degree. I mean, you can make the argument that she's well connected, but are those connections going to do so well for her, or is she connected in dangerous ways to a bunch of players? But either way, I think maybe familiarity breeds a certain level of comfort, and she may be able to trade on some of that stuff. And I think she could do well. I think that she's, you know, she's going to be an asset in the challenges. I think that she's always going to be somebody that has a reputation of being such a dangerous player that she can convince people to use her as a meat shield, essentially, to use her as somebody to hide behind, that she'll absorb, you know, a bunch of the damage. And I think that if she can formulate yet another big alliance or even a small wrecking crew, which is basically what she had for season 20, I think that she can go deep again. And just as I say, like, I don't think that it would be crazy to make Kim your winner pick. I think it would be slightly crazier to make Parvati your winner pick, but I still would not rule it out. There's so many different threats out there this season, which is one of the reasons that makes it so exciting. It's very hard to predict how any of this is going to go. And there's so many dangerous people on the board that you can make an argument that, like, Parvati actually might be able to sneak by for a while. And if she gets momentum in the game, I think she is an outstandingly dangerous player.
Yeah, I don't have Parvati as a winner or somebody's there in the very end, but I am much less worried about Parvati than I am Rob and Sandra. I feel like that Rob and Sandra are on their own tier of threat, and Parvati I feel like is considerably less, and I can more imagine the scenario where Parvati gets her legs underneath her.
I think that she is, you know, if we're putting everybody into tiers, I do think that, like, Boston, Rob, and Sandra are literally Boston God tier. You know, like, I do think that they are at that tippy top of the iceberg. And by association, I would put Amber pretty close just because that's an easy shot against Rob. I can't imagine that both of them do well.
Especially with the Edge of Extinction. If it wasn't for the Edge, I feel like that I could imagine a scenario where Amber ends up being okay if Rob gets voted out.
Totally. And still, even though that's out there, and even though, like, they're both going to be targeted by the fact that they're married to each other and both playing Survivor, it's so audacious. It's like almost kind of rude that they are playing together again, and I love it. I think it's delicious. I think it's amazing. I fanboyed so hard.
I haven't
hard.
Heard anybody else describe Rob and Amber playing together as rude before.
It is like so bold.
And you've done it twice on this podcast.
It's like, it's so brazen. It's so brazen that they're both just like, yeah, we're both going to play. Screw you. We know that you're going to try to target us.
Stephanie Tanner gifts.
You know? How rude. I really cannot stress enough how much I fanboyed when I saw that they were both. And I was like, this is ridiculous, the audacity. It's amazing. But in the same way that we're
Stephanie
saying
Tanner,
like,
does look like she could be the fifth Mariano daughter. The young Stephanie Tanner.
That would be good. I mean, a Full House reboot with Rob and Amber leading the pack is a pretty fun idea. In the same way that I think, like,
cut
it's a mistake.
It out, Wiggler.
Oh, God. In the same way I think Robbie and the Rippers, that it would be a mistake to underestimate both Kim and Parvati's abilities to get momentum under their legs. I think it would be the same thing to underestimate Queen Sandra and Boston Rob. Mm-hmm. I just do think that they are coming in with so much heat on them, and it really doesn't help that they were in that position that they were on 39. You've talked about this a lot more than I have. Your experience having played with All Stars before, that, like, one of the things that, like, is a factor in this stuff is, like, you're targeting people who are going to be, like, screen time hogs, right? Like, you're going to target people, or you're going to be incentivized to, like, kind of feel a certain level of threat emanating off of somebody who, you know, is just like a darling to the quote unquote Survivor gods, such as they exist. Spoiler, they don't. I think to that degree, I think people are going to not love that Rob and Sandra just had an entire season built on them.
Yeah.
And I think that they're going to come after them. And Parvati has had no such thing. Anyone who is, like, really savvy and really sharp and really hooked in to the Survivor community and what's been going on outside of just the game tape will know that Parvati has been out to location and has seen behind the curtain. And if I'm Adam Klein, for example, like somebody who would know that, or Tyson, who knocked my socks off in his interview with ET Canada, and the way that he talked about how to utilize, you know, pregame
stuff.
He's
ready.
Oh, my God. I hope we're going to talk about Tyson. If someone is smart enough to use that piece to their advantage about Parvati, I would be more concerned about her than I'd be concerned about, for example, Kim. Like, I think if they're like, she knows how production works, she knows their codes, she's been on, she's had, like, you know, radios in her ear before, she's seen challenges from the sidelines, she knows too much, she's even more dangerous than ever, then I think she could be in trouble. That's the stuff that would never make the air.
Let me set you up about Tyson. Here's just a clip about us talking about the evolution of Tyson, and then I want to get your thoughts on Tyson season 40.
I mean, I think that we're going to track the evolution of Tyson in addition to the evolution of strategy, that we're going to get, you know, Tyson here. He's going to be probably, you know, the craziest that we're going to see of our three Tysons. He's going to be very outlandish, and he's really out there just trying to have fun. And then by the second time he's going to play, I think he's going to be more acutely aware of the game going on around him. And of course, he's going to try to make a big move, which is not going to work in his favor in Heroes versus Villains. And then by the time we see him the third time around, we're going to get our fully formed Tyson.
Okay. But Josh, what's west of Westeros?
Yeah.
What's west of the fully formed Tyson that we see win in season 27?
Look, he just talks about Survivor at a level that I've never seen anybody really talk about Survivor. He talks about things that that aren't obvious to think about, but when he points them out, it's like this whole level of like, of course, obviously that's something to think about. And I'm talking about like his like gear talk, you know, like gaming the system of like telling them how much weight you weigh versus how much weight you actually weigh, how tall you are in order to like, manipulate, your height on a perch, to give you an advantage there. How if you have like enough mini advantages and it gives you a cumulative 5% advantage over the other players, you'll take that. He just thinks about Survivor on a micro level from that perspective. That is astonishingly impressive to me.
Wait until you see him handle fire tokens, Josh.
Yeah, I mean, I think I said this, that my heart is much more open to fire tokens than it is to the Edge of Extinction. Edge of Extinction is a proven bad idea. We don't know anything about fire tokens. And I think if I'm being charitable and if I want to put on my rose tinted glasses and not have like what my baseline take being is like, I think fire tokens should have been saved for its own season. You've got the winners. There's really no reason to do any of these other bells and whistles.
Survivor fire tokens. I feel
You know, something like Survivor Fire Island would be hard. I think you'd have some issues there.
It's crowded.
You know, it's crowded. Islands of Fire, we've done. I think as an idea, I don't think fire tokens is awful, and I think that having the winners test it out. These are the people who won the $1 million before. Let's see what they do. We saw what they did with their millions of dollars. Some of them good, some of them not so good. And let's see what they do with their in-game Survivor money. I think it's kind of a cute idea.
Wait, hold on. Are you saying, Josh, that we should be looking at how the Survivors handled the $1 million that they received? Is this a harbinger of how they're going to handle the fire tokens?
No, I like put my Probst hat on. I put on my banana shirt and my cowboy hat. And that's like my Probst cell is like, they won the $1 million.
Is that why Name Redacted isn't here?
It could be. Could be part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Five several names redacted, maybe.
names plural redacted aren't
names
here.
Names plural redacted aren't here. So when I'm being charitable, but I think like somebody who can break that idea open, Tyson is a strong candidate for somebody to think outside the box in a way that he will break fire tokens before many other people. This is another, but this is the example of the person who I am talking about when I talked before about Kim like underestimating her threat level. I hope that it is just like the Tyson thing of like kind of like chest thumping and being like, I'm the best player ever, and people don't recognize that and it bothers me. I hope that he can believe that and that could be true. I do think that Tyson, I think I said this in chapter 27, that I think Tyson's win is that Tyson as the winner of that season is maybe like the best Survivor performance ever. I said something to that effect. I don't remember it exactly verbatim. But I do think that that's true. And I think it's a very good thing that other people don't necessarily, as like a wide scale thing, think that, because I think that Tyson is such an obvious asset for such a long period of time. I think he is somebody like Kim, where when you're around him, or even Parvati, when you're around him, you just want him to like you. You have such a good time around him. He's so funny. He's so quick-witted. Like, think no further than like the Russell Feathers stuff. Yeah. But even in some of like this pre-game press, he's had some lines that were so fast on his feet that just killed me. Like Gordon saying to him, "So my wife and I are thinking about starting a family," and Tyson's immediate response is, "Have you tried intercourse?" It's just so quick and just like killed me. So funny. And I think that like it speaks not only to like his comedic chops, but I think he talked about in the ET Canada video about how much time he had to make the decision to draw rocks at the Russell Feathers vote, and how much like complicated math he had to do in like 20 seconds. He's an excellent Survivor player, and he is an excellent Survivor player that I don't think everybody recognizes necessarily as excellently, that he is as excellent as he is.
Yeah.
But if he has a chip on his shoulder, and if that's like the now broken shoulder of like feeling like he's got like something to prove to people, I do think that that's a bad mentality for Tyson coming into the game. I think that he should be, very, very happy that he's coming in with the reputation that he's coming in with, because I think if he can play, I think that he's one of those people who could basically repeat his win from Blood versus Water. I think that that's he could duplicate that game for sure.
Yeah, the motivation doesn't bother me as much. Whatever, is sort of like driving him to keep going. I feel like that, elite athletes have that they always just, drive to be the best. So that
obviously, I have no idea what that means.
Yeah, neither do I. And also on top of that, also Tyson learned to be like a, tournament level poker player the time, since he also played his last game. So he knows odds, he knows a ton of additional strategic maneuvers that he's thinking about, so that he's loaded and ready to go.
I think of the people we talked about so far, I would say, and I love Ethan and he's my winner pick, I would say that of the people that we talked about, I think that Tyson has the best shot to win the game.
Okay, all right, so then let's touch on let's talk about Jeremy and Natalie as a pair. I've got a clip that talks about Jeremy and Natalie from our Survivor San Juan del Sur chapter. Here is a clip of them of us talking about how their games are collaborative.
Just to go back to your earlier point about Jeremy and Natalie, it'll be interesting to see if a Survivor 31 Jeremy is kind of like a Heroes versus Villains JT. It sounds like you're saying that if Natalie is the one who was like the Steven with the JT and they were sort of working together on a lot of these decisions, what happens when Jeremy doesn't have that sounding board?
I don't think that it's anything like, Natalie was driving the bus and he was just on board. I don't think that it was anything like that. I think that they were a partnership, and I don't know that it would be as extreme as what we see from JT. And JT, Heroes, Villains, as we've come to learn from people who've listened to our coverage of the evolution of strategy, certainly has his supporters. I will be interested to see what Jeremy looks like without Natalie, because I think that she was a big part of his game. I think that she was a big part of everything that he was planning going forward. She was a great thinker. She's a great sounding board. It's really key to have that person if you can find that person. And these two people lose their loved ones immediately, and I think that they find each other. I think it'll be interesting to see Jeremy fly solo. Just as it was interesting to see Natalie fly solo this season, I think it'll be really interesting to see Jeremy on his own.
Okay. We talked about there in that clip that maybe Jeremy without a Natalie could be like a JT without a Steven. Jeremy's going to find Steven and some others in Survivor Second Chance and go on for the win. But the very interesting thing here is that the two of them are back together on the same starting tribe. Isn't that fun?
Yeah. So this is... I love where I'm at with Survivor right now, because I'm not paying close enough attention to know that. That's great. That's fun. I and good for them. I think that that's great, and I think that they have. I think that there's. I mean, I don't know what the rest of that tribe permutation is, but San Juan del Sur, which is secretly one of the great seasons of Survivor, of modern Survivor, not so secret around RHAP, because I think it was one of the very best RHAP seasons of Survivor for sure, pretty famously. I don't think that it has like this big. I don't think people really remember it very well. And I certainly think that people will remember Jeremy more for Second Chances. And I don't think that they should think of him as like an especially manipulative guy from that season. I think he's pretty trustworthy on that season. He's pretty solid with the people that he's solid with. He's crafty where he needs to be, but not any more so than many of the other players. And I think like Natalie's game, I don't know what you remember from Natalie's game if you're one of these players. I don't know that you remember anything like especially dangerous about Natalie. I think that they both should be separately from each other on pretty solid footing coming into the game. And then the fact that the two of them do have that history together, if they're able to like communicate low key and be pretty cool with each other on the low, on the Malolo, then I think that they could be pretty dangerous for each other again. The thing is, though, that Jeremy, who has played against in San Juan del Sur, has demonstrated a reticence to play with fellow San Juan del Surians, as he was at odds with both Wentworth and Keith Nail.
Maybe they're all in the final five.
They were all in the final five, so good bet that they will that Nat and Jeremy could go pretty deep again.
Yeah. Okay, Josh, I have one other Jeremy clip. This is not from the Evolution of Strategy, but we also went back and our team listened to some of my interviews, especially with the people in the 30s, of people after they played their winning season. And so this is from a conversation that I had with Jeremy in episode 13 recap of Survivor HHH. It all comes back to Survivor Heroes versus Healers versus Hustlers. This is back in December of 2017. Here is a little bit of a chat that I had with Jeremy Collins when we started talking about the Jeremy maybe going back to Survivor.
Okay. So let me tell you, for a while I was like, I'm done with Survivor, but like, I would come back and play. Oh, after Cambodia, I was like,
"Oh, you're
done
playing, not done watching."
Yeah, I'm all done. Okay. Oh no, I'll always watch it. Okay. But like, I would never play it, right? And now I'm at the point where I look and I'm like, you know what? I would do it again. You know, like, an all winter season, I would do it again. And I feel like an all winter season, like, it's going to be idols and advantages, and it's going to be so crazy. Like, there's going to be, it's going to be off the wall, and I think that's going to be so fun to watch. And it's going to suck to play, but as a fan, it's going to be awesome to watch. So I just look at all these and I'm like, that's going to be fun later on, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. All they're doing is they're just adding to the repertoire where they could just load up for an all winter season and just throw everything at you, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it's cool, you know. Listen, you have to have a social game anyways, because you're not gonna get every advantage, you're not gonna get every idol. There's no way, you know. So you have to come up with some social game. You know, and you know what? Listen, half of it is luck anyway. So, like, you just got to go out there and do the best you can and hope that the ball falls in your court. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, so, yeah. Like, you just got to do your thing.
Well, I'm excited to hear you say that you would play again, because I did feel like that you thought that you'd said that you were done on playing again. And so that would be exciting for the all winter season. I definitely think that they're going to do an all winter season. I think that that is like the most likely next returnee season that they end up doing. Is,
oh, you think so? The next one?
I think so, because I kind of feel like that Game Changers, I don't know if people really love Game Changers. Like, I think that they really love Second Chances so much that they sort of like tried to recapture that, and I don't think it ended up working for whatever reason.
Oh, geez, don't
with
say
Game
that.
Changers.
Oh,
but I feel like that, you know, could that be 40? I don't know. I mean,
listen, I said I would do an all winter season, but I don't think I'm ready yet.
Oh, like, you're ready yet.
Don't throw that out there. Like I'm not ready to do it yet, but I know I will be ready. But like, once you start throwing it up, I'm like, oh, now this is going to get real. You know what I mean?
Yeah. When do you want to go? Like in 5 years?
I don't know. You can't give me a number.
Okay. So, put
See,
a flag
people,
in that one.
People can change their mind about how they feel about Survivor. It's possible. We're human beings.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Put a Sesternino seed in Jeremy's ear about,
yeah, you did.
Hey, start getting ready, Jeremy. Season 40 is coming. All winners.
Yeah, and you probably convinced the powers that be at Survivor, like, oh yeah, season 40 for winners. That'd be a good idea. Thanks, Rob.
Okay.
Look at the power you wield.
I manifested it.
You manifested it.
Yeah.
It's very impressive. Very impressive.
All right, so Jeremy said,
I hope he got ready. I hope he got ready.
Yeah, he said they're going to throw everything at us in season 40. So that's tokens.
Jeremy the prophet as well. Yeah.
He's on board.
Yeah.
Oh, that God. Was a fun one. That was a fun
it's
one
Jeremy
to go back and find.
Yeah,
okay.
That's funny.
Also, so Josh, that I can also break the news to you that in addition to we have where Jeremy and Nat are on one tribe, Tony and Sarah are going to be on the same tribe.
Oh, wow. Could you, do you have the tribes in front of you? Could you quickly tell me what they are, or is that too much work?
No, I can bring that up real quick. That's all out in the open now.
I did see like Survivor tweeted out like the pictures of the tribes together, and Danny was invisible already, which was hilarious. Yeah, that was amazing.
That's right,
that was
where she wants to be.
Like, okay, invisibility queen.
Okay, so on that tribe with Jeremy and Natalie, they're also joined by Boston Rob and Parvati.
Okay.
And then also Michelle Fitzgerald.
Okay.
Denise, Danny, Ethan, Ben, and Adam Klein.
Okay.
So Rob, Jeremy, Ethan, Ben, Adam, Parvati, Natalie, Michelle, Denise, and Danny.
Okay.
And then the other tribe, we've got Tony and Sarah.
Yep.
Sandra and Kim.
Interesting. Okay.
And Amber.
Okay.
And Tyson.
Okay.
Wendell, Yule, Sophie, and Nick.
Interesting. Wow. Oh my God. This is exciting. So Tony and Sarah are playing together again. I feel like that probably bodes well for them, other than, although it does seem like all of the women are targeting Sarah already, which I think is not a bad call.
Yeah, you know, I would think it's good for Tony if then she ends up, like, I know that on surface it's like, oh, that she'll work with Tony, but I think that Tony's less threatening without Sarah.
Yeah, I think that that's probably true. Tony and Sandra being on a tribe together again is exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I actually think that that's probably okay for both of them, mm-hmm. I would guess, right?
Yeah.
Because they you would expect that they at least somewhat buried the hatchet during the pre-jury on Game Changers.
Me and Sandra bury the hatchet.
She could be the queen. Like, I'm the king.
Yeah. And I bury the hatchet. I bury myself.
Yeah, he'll bury himself too. Yeah. I like what Tony's saying in the preseason.
Yeah, he seems very humble. I think he's in a good spot
if he does that authentically out there, that would have been. There were many times where I was like, man, I would love to just like sit down and talk to Tony after Game Changers, be like, you can go back there and you can do well. You just have to chill out. You have to chill out. You have to show people that like you can be chill and that you can be somebody who can be relied upon to a certain extent. Show them the pieces of you that are authentically not so crazy, and you could probably still do well. So I hope that that's true for Tony. It's certainly what he's talking about in the preseason, and that's exciting. But he is another one that's like, he's, you know, he's not at that Robin Sandra level, but I think that he's like in that Parvati and Kim space of like, these are people that you got to be pretty scared about pretty quickly. I can't believe. Okay. Ooh, we need this.
Here's a little bit of Tony and Sarah talk from you and I.
Let's go into another intriguing dynamic here at the Braun Tribe between Sarah and Tony.
Yeah.
And so Sarah has her suspicions about Tony. She thinks that Tony could be a cop.
Are you a cop?
He has the look that cops have.
You look like a cop.
If she's wrong, he should be a cop.
He should be a cop.
All right. So Sarah goes and confronts Tony with this information. First off, should she confront Tony with this information?
I don't see why not. I mean, she has a suspicion that he's a cop. So she's asking, like, are you a cop? And if he's not a cop, his answer would be like, no, I'm not a cop. But instead he's panicking and clearly he's a cop.
Sarah goes and approaches Tony.
Okay. And Sarah says, wait, will you look at me real quick? Will you be honest with me? Are you a cop?
No. Why?
You swear?
I swear.
You look like a cop.
I could be a cop if you want. Why?
You swear you're not?
I swear. Why? I wouldn't hide that.
What do you do?
Construction. Tiles. That's my...
You look like a cop.
I have a tattoo here. They wouldn't allow that.
How do you know?
I have plenty of cop friends. You don't know no cops?
No, I know cops.
I have maybe 50 friends that are cops.
Said the cop. Or the career criminal.
Reformed. And is now into construction.
But the thing about this that's kind of wild is that it's just so bang, 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 bang. Like, there's no hesitation whatsoever. Like, Tony doesn't do the thing where he hesitates and says to himself, should I lie or should I not lie? His split second impact is lie.
Yes.
Lie, lie, lie. And then afterwards, it's like, he's not even going to think of a lie.
Yeah.
he's really fast. It's impressive.
He is very fast on his tip-top toes.
I don't know if this speaks to my limits as a Survivor player or just like as a person
But like, I could not lie that fast. I could not come up with a fake story real quick. If somebody asked me, like, do you do podcasts? I'd be like, no.
Nah.
Like, no, why do you ask?
Right.
Like, what do you do? I'm a doctor.
Right.
Really? Really? Like, oh, yeah, heart surgery.
Mm-hmm.
Like, really? He says very fast. It's not just construction, it's tiles. He says to confessional, I thought for a split second, should I tell her I'm a cop? And I said, you know what? If I tell her I'm a police officer, then the first thing she's going to be thinking is the guy is strategical. He's tactical. He's probably sharp on his toes. He's very observant. And they're going to think, to be right, I'm obviously a threat to them. They're obviously probably going to want to blindside me right away.
Yeah. So Tony has made the call. I am not a cop to these people. I am construction worker Tony.
So he asked Sarah, what do you do, Sarah?
I'm a cop.
Are you really?
Yeah, I interview and I interrogate, and those are my daily duties, and I get lied to every day at work.
He ends up saying to her, you're a pretty cool girl, Sarah. I have a confession to make. You want me to tell you the truth?
Yes.
I'm not a cop.
Oh, you're lying to me. Just tell me you're a cop.
Come on.
Come on.
Great stuff from Tony and Sarah and us.
Very, very fun. It's going to be years from now, but I am excited to get back into the TEOS of it all. That's one of the things that I'm taking away from today. It's also very funny that Tony was a cop who was pretending to be a construction worker, and then he was a known cop in Game Changers, and now it sounds like he'll be coming into season 40. He was a police officer, but now he's also in construction for real, mm-hmm. kind of like he's flipping houses.
Yeah.
So the Tony Vlachos arc has been, it's already pretty yes. fun across these three seasons.
Do you think that he will tell Sarah the truth about being a cop in this season?
I can't imagine that Tony's going to try to lie to Sarah too much. I mean, but then again, that's me really severely underestimating Tony. I think it's quite possible that he will viciously lie to Sarah.
Yeah.
I think that one of the things that was great about Tony's first season and contributed heavily to his unicorn status and his win was something that he would talk about a lot in the post games, is that he would do what he did during the day, and then at night he would interrogate himself about everything that he did, and he would figure out how to problem solve it the next day, rinse and repeat every single day of Survivor, which speaks to why he's able to lie in that moment with such abandon and commit to the bit so fiercely. And what he's going to go and do is that night, he's just going to think about, was that the right move? How do I pivot from that? What do I do from there? And it's just playing the situation as it lies, and then moving the situation, and then playing that situation, and so on and so forth. It was a really, really, really wonderful game to behold that we have all talked about for so long now.
We're blessed.
It was a true blessing. And then Game Changers, he comes in with clones and spy bunkers and all of this stuff.
Too much, and he's
the one who it was. Man, reading his press, music to my ears, honestly, to see him being the one who says that stuff, seeing like Dalton and Gordon like ask him the questions of like, all right, you had clones, you had bunkers, what do you got this time? Because talking to Tony out in Fiji for Game Changers, the three of us were dying afterwards, and we were trading notes. There's a great story of they were all going to do their cast photos. And it was the end of the press day, and Dalton and Gordon and I are just hanging around together as we're waiting to leave the island where we do press. And Tony has just been taking his photos, and he's walking away from doing his photos, and he waves goodbye to us. And I'll clean up the language, but he like waves at us and he goes, "See you later, guys. I'm gonna go F some S up for you," and screams it like really, really loud, like because he knows how hard we're rooting for him. And we're like, "Oh, goddammit, Tony!" The whole cast is like 15 feet away from you right now.
Yeah.
Like they're like just a little bit inland in the woods. So like that was just like the big TV energy that he brought to Game Changers, and reading what he's talking about here in the preseason right now. That is absolutely the only version of Tony that will ever see any modicum of success on Survivor again. And he's still Tony, and he's still who he was. So you probably have to bet against him. But I'm really hopeful that he can make a dent. I'm not too optimistic, but I guess I'm more optimistic than that draft where Tony almost went undrafted.
Yeah. Okay. So the question of, can you play differently on a return appearance to Survivor is something that I explored in an interview with Denise Stapley once upon a time. And this was way back when. This was in the episode 3 of Survivor Cambodia. Denise Stapley and I talked about this subject, about players playing differently when they return to the game. Here's what Denise had to say about that.
It's so difficult for us to try to change these things in our everyday lives, and we're not under these traumatic conditions that Survivor brings out. Is it one thing to sort of say, okay, I'm going to be different, but then at the point when you get out there on Survivor in those traumatic conditions, is it that much harder to do under the extreme circumstances?
Absolutely. I mean, you think any change that you're working on outside of the game in your everyday life, you know, you can try and practice that. And, you know, you could say, you know, if you're somebody who's more introverted, you can practice, you know, getting kind of outside of your shell and talking to people, or, you know, trying to respond to conflict differently. But Survivor is a different beast. And you go out there and, you know, you have not only the changes you've been trying to make, but it's so much harder because of the elements and the paranoia that sets in and the pressure. And, you know, and there really is, there's a huge pressure for every one of those players out there right now to change that game. And so you add that in, and yeah, I think that can kind of short circuit a lot of the good intentions.
Josh, we'll see. I feel like this is a fascinating subject in terms of can people change? I feel like it's a subject matter that I feel like was explored in great detail on The Sopranos.
Uh-huh. Sure.
We see it come up in Survivor. I thought Denise would be a good person to ask about that.
Yeah, I think that was a good interview instinct that you had. And my answer to that is, for some people, I hope so. Mm-hmm. For their sake. But I think to some degree, you are who you are. You'll just have to be who you are and play that way when you get out there. But I think that the delight about a season like this, assembling a cast like this, and there are these rogue elements in the fire tokens and EOE that make it really hard to divine exactly how any of this is going to go. Let's not belabor the point, mm-hmm. but in terms of the cast, it's just, there are so many heavy hitters that, like, you know, not everybody can hide. Because of the sheer quantity of these people with their reputations, like, some of them got to escape by. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, some of them are going to have to make it past a certain point. There isn't really a game changers-ish result to mm-hmm. this season. I don't want to jinx that, but
right. So when you bring back people that are all like mostly on the same level of player, you know, it's hard to have, you know, bad outcomes. Where when you bring back, you know, three winners and, you know, and then a bunch of people that are like, who, what, well, what game changer? Then, yeah, you could certainly, you know, get bad outcomes.
Game changers is the historical answer to do Survivor viewers know Survivor better than Jeff Probst, mm-hmm. in my opinion. That outcome should have been so obvious. And it would be nice to be heard mm-hmm. to a certain degree. Because it's very clear when you throw three winners into a mix with all these people, or if you have enough people who are just like, they're back, but like, for what reason? And they kind of know that, and they know that they got to rally mm-hmm. together against a bunch of the people that are more legendary. You're going to get what you're going to get. And here, everybody won. So everybody's got a stake to the throne. Okay. So everybody's on a level playing field to some extent.
All right. A couple other, quick ones. Adam Klein and I once talked about Adam Klein returning for an all winner season. This is, back during Survivor Game Changers. I believe that I was in a hotel room in Toronto, Canada, following a live show that we did. Adam Klein and I talked about, if Adam Klein would play in an all-winner season.
I think this season has always been about, like, the people who came into the game with a really high threat level versus the people who came in with a really low threat level. But only one of those groups saw it that way.
What about yourself in a potential winner season? Is that something that you'd be interested in doing?
Of course. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, But I'm sort of like Sandra. Like if Survivor calls me to go on Survivor, like anytime, any place, anywhere, I that's what I was saying before I ever got cast on Survivor. I don't know why I would be any different right now. I'm just as big of a fan now as I was before.
So you would play potentially with non-winners, even though the track record is not good in that scenario.
I love Survivor. If I get the chance to play Survivor, I'd be thrilled to play Survivor with whoever wants to play Survivor with me.
Okay. Josh, back in the real time. How do you feel about Adam Klein here?
I love Adam as a human being. I think he's amazing, and he's somebody who I've been really happy to meet through this process. An evolution of strategy disciple. So one of the first, I think the first TEOS listener to win Survivor. So who will always have a very special place in my heart. If I, in the hypothetical universe where I can quantum leap into the body of one of the players of Winners at War, Adam would be one of the very first people I go after. I would get rid of him almost immediately if I could.
You're going to quantum leap him.
No, I'm quantum leaping into literally anybody else. And with the knowledge that I possess of Adam Klein, this is a person who has lived and breathed Survivor forever. It is deeply embedded in his DNA. Survivor is coded in his body. He played online Survivor games. He's played alternate reality games. Is that what they're called? Alternate reality games? Online reality games, but he's played
live action reality games.
He's LARPed Survivor. He's done the Bob Crowley stuff, and he's done Survivor Maryland, and he is so outspoken with his Survivor fandom that I think if people don't have that on their
Big Brother Canada finales,
if people do not have that on their radar, then Adam could do pretty well here because he's somebody to be underestimated. He knows this game inside and out. But I think that just about everybody's going to know that Adam is the super fan of the cast.
Yeah,
I think like Adam is somebody who is just like such a clear Survivor brain, like somebody who just thinks about this show and strategy in such a clear cut way. And, one of like the advantages of Adam is like, it's not personal with Adam. It's very business with Adam. He's very articulate about that in Millennials versus Gen X. But I also think that to a certain degree means like you can trust that at a certain point, you can't trust Adam anymore. You can always trust that Adam, no matter what, will do what's in his self-interest. I think he's also, among the men, one of the least challenge savvy players, I would say, of the cast. So I think that he's in danger in the pre-merge. I would be nervous for Adam coming in. But he is another one that like, I don't want to underestimate Adam again because of all of those strikes against him. He is somebody who knows Survivor so well, has probably been thinking about his positionality in a winter season for quite a long time. And this was my instinct about Adam when I saw the cast, and the instinct moved, I wouldn't say too significantly, but it moved when I watched his ET Canada video and saw him talking about how people probably view him in terms of his Survivor win, how he can fit in with this group. I think that he is somebody who could who can use all of those strengths to his advantage once again. But if it were me playing up against Adam, I'd go for him very quick.
Okay. I've got one more that I'll play for you today. I talked with Wendell also about a potential return to Survivor. This was way back when. This was in a post-game interview I did right after Winner Retrospective with Mr. Wendell Holland following his win in Ghost Island.
Wait, John Densford wants to know, how would you approach a second timeout? Would you only play if it's all winners?
The time, it just has to be right. When I got off the island, I was like, yeah, I'll go back out tomorrow. But when I think about things, it's like I've seen winners go back out there and kind of like really tarnish their records. I've seen I've only seen one winner win twice.
Yeah.
So like an all winner season would be pretty enticing. And if there's another kind of season, everything, like I'd have to be at the right place in life. Like some big things shouldn't you know, my business and everything would have to be, I'd have to be able to walk away from these things. Mm-hmm. So it would be cool to play again, but everything has to be right.
I would really like an all winter season.
Would you?
That's the one that makes the most sense to me in terms of if you're going to bring people back, why not do all winners?
I agree. It will be cool, man. We got some good winners. I know they're like waiting for a few more good winners or whatever.
What are we waiting for? Yeah. I mean, we have how many? We have 35 different winners.
I know. But isn't there speculation that they're waiting for a couple more lady winners or something? I don't know.
Well, you're not helping with that.
No, man. I should have let someone else win. So the winners.
What is that? What you're hearing that we need more women winners? We don't have what, 9 or 10?
I think they need a couple more. That's the speculation. Mm. That's what Probst texted me the other day.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. All right.
Psych.
Okay. Root for women winners in season 37 and 38.
I don't know what they're waiting for. Okay.
Keep waiting, everybody.
Yeah, that didn't happen.
Sounds like Wendell's got Probst's number. So Wendell, if you could just text to him # end edge of extinction, or call Jimmy Fallon. He has a message for you. Or tell Jimmy to call back Wiggler.
Yeah. They were waiting for more women. They never came.
The list they've got is great, and they could have, you know, whatever.
They just needed Nick Wilson. That was the only other addition.
They were waiting for Nick. Yeah. They were waiting for Nick.
So, all right. There you go. Any thoughts on Wendell? I feel like that you and I, so far, that you and I think are in lockstep on just about everybody.
Yeah. I've listened to 4 out of 5 of the roundtables, and my memory retention on this stuff is pretty bare. And I don't think that I've listened to the last one you did. So that's where Wendell
is. Is it groupthink? Is that what's going on here?
I don't know. Maybe I feel influenced. I don't really see a reason why Wendell shouldn't do well. I don't see any reason why he's like a massive threat to anybody.
Who's coming for him?
Who's coming for Wendell? I think Wendell should be able to do really well. And I think then if like he's like still standing pretty deep in the game, I think Wendell could very easily get back to Final Tribal. Mm-hmm. And I like his shot to win there. I think Wendell probably is somebody out there who maybe feels like he has something to prove a little bit because he won by the skin of his teeth against Dom. Mm-hmm. But he played a great game.
Yeah, he played
a really good game, and he was chill, and he had the toothpick, and he was like Batman with some of those challenges. Like, he was great. He was really, really great. And I think that there are so many flashy winners out there, and then like even people who just have like red alerts about their reputations in a way that I don't think Wendell does. I really see no reason for Wendell to do poorly out here.
Okay. All right.
Is that your take, or did I diverge?
I mean, I don't have him as a winner. I've said that I feel like that the winner, I feel like, is either going to be a person who's a parent or Ethan. I think that those are like
I think that makes sense too. And I think back to Second Chance.
Wendell should have started a family before you left.
Well, I think one of the things like that I remembered from Second Chance was just how young Spencer was against the field.
Yeah.
And that was something that like I'd really picked up on. Yeah. And it felt to me like this will be a cast that would have a hard time rewarding a kid. And like that bared out. You know, not that he's a kid, he's a smart young man, mm-hmm. but I think that there could be a degree of that. So like I would be fairly quick to rule out most of the people that like you could. I'm a 35-year-old almost, so mm-hmm. like, I mean, me calling any of them a kid is
that's the same as Wendell.
But, yeah, I guess, you know, but like, if I were one of them, I wouldn't vote for me either, you know, to win.
Yeah.
So like, I do think that you're probably looking at somebody who's like a little bit further on in life and has more of that at stake.
Yeah. Okay. And that's also, you know, very much that, you know, when Steven talks about the jury for Second Chances and the way that they were looking at things, that I just feel like that I feel like that this is like a similar makeup in terms of that the types of people that are brought back onto the show as opposed to the regular seasons of the show where it's a lot of people like in their 20s and a younger group. So
right.
That's just how I could see, especially when it's such a big jury that we're looking at.
Oh God. Yeah.
Pick jury. Potentially. All right.
I guess.
Josh Wiggler, we covered so much ground today. What a podcast.
Oh my gosh. Well, I was very, very nervous at the start of this thing. I have Xanax prescription that I take for my anxiety sometimes. I took a Xanax and I got less anxious over the course of the conversation. It worked. Medication works for some of us, not for everybody. Rob, you put me at ease, so I really appreciate it.
Good.
It was your dulcet tones.
My singing?
Yeah, you really got me back. No, this is a delight, and like it's not just a delight because we're talking about Survivor. That's fun. It's a delight because you have become over the past how long have we known each other now? When was season 24, right?
Yeah, so you 2012? And I first started talking in 2012. Yeah.
Yeah. So we've known each other for getting close to 10 years. And like you are one of the dearest people in my life. Because of like shifting priorities, like we're not podcasting together quite as much as we have in the past.
This week we are
because we did The Curb and something that I think at this point is not yet announced. I don't want to scoop anything. But we text a lot. We still talk a lot, but we're just like not talking in the same way. Few things bring me more joy than getting behind a microphone with you. It's so much fun.
The
to talk
feeling
to
is mutual, and I really appreciate you saying that.
And it feels good to be in like a pretty good headspace talking to you, because that has not been the case for me for a little while on some of our podcasts recently. And I do feel really good, and a huge piece of that is thanks to you specifically, and thanks to you for building the community that you've built and the people that I've gotten to either directly meet or even just like brush elbows with, or the people who haven't, you know, who I haven't met in person at an event, but I tweet with online, or I got, you know, a nice message from, or whatever it is. All of you have really contributed to a big healing process for me, and I remain a work in progress. I am far from perfect, but I'm doing much better than last you heard me. And I cannot thank you, Rob, and everybody else enough. I'll never be able to repay the kindness that you showed me.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for that. And I wish I could take more credit for the community, but unlike your friend Jacob from the Lost Island, yeah. I didn't find them. They found me. Found me. I was just here doing my thing. They found me. But we've got very lucky with the people that found me. It could have been a whole bunch of a-holes.
Yeah, it could have been. That would have been
not good.
It's a tough alternate universe. Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
All right. Anyway, this was so much fun. If you are curious on the evolution of strategy, go check evolution
check
of strategy.
Out.
Go check it out.
Out.
Listen to Borneo for free.
It's free.
You can pick and choose seasons, Chinese menu. Or,
yeah, that's what you always said.
Yeah. Pick and choose seasons or jump right in blocks of 10, 11 to 20. 21 to 30, or the full box set, all at your disposal at evolutionofstrategy.com. Of course, you could hear much more from Josh Wiggler over on Post Show Recaps and at Round Howard. Josh, anything you want to highlight?
We've got the Lost podcast is continuing. We are embarking on season 2 this week, I think around the time that this podcast has dropped. So has Down the Hatch. So you could really choose which Wiggler you want to hear first, Survivor Wiggler or Lost Wiggler. I don't know which one is a crazier version of me. We're both pretty insane right now. So that's going on. Mike Bloom and Jessica Lease are doing a really great job covering Star Trek Picard over at Post Show
Recaps.
I have to catch up.
I think tonight I'm going to catch up.
Have you seen the premiere yet?
No, not yet.
No, it's fun. It's really fun. I haven't watched episode 2 yet, but I'm looking forward to it. Very, very sporadic Curb Your Enthusiasm podcasting. Nothing regular is being promised. Every once in a while, a wild Curb Your Enthusiasm podcast is popping up. And we've got some other stuff. I've mapped out post-show recaps through May 1st. I've got it calendarized. And once we hit the end of February, we're looking at like a guaranteed 4 different shows a week. And then in March for a good stretch, it's 5 different shows a week that we're covering. So a lot going on in the scripted wing of our HAP.
All right. Josh Wiggler, great
and
job.
And also I've got cat videos on Instagram. I'm getting into not from the movie.
No,
not the movie.
I know. Yeah.
Mr. Mistopheles, nowhere to be found.
Yes. Well, congratulations again on
They're
your
great.
New arrivals.
They're great. They're
checking
great.
Them out on Instagram, of course.
We're very proud dad, proud cat parent.
We've got so much going on in the Rob Has a Podcast world. Find out everything that's going on in our Rob Has a Podcast patron community when you head on over to robhasawebsite.com/patron. Find out about our patron Facebook groups. Yes, multiple. There are four of them. And a bunch of other side groups also that you might find your way into. robhasawebsite.com/patron. And Josh, I finished a five-hour patron cast last night with taking calls from the listeners until
all about Survivor or other stuff too.
Mostly about Survivor 40, but you know, a lot of other
the circle. Did you get into the circle?
A little bit. I mean, other than you, US most people circle. Are kind of you know finished the circle a couple
out,
weeks
they're
ago.
They're circled out. They're circled out.
But robhaswebsite.com/patron for more info on everything else that we're doing, our live events this spring, and much more at robhaswebsite.com/patron. Thank you so much for listening. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.